we go.
What you hearing? What you hearing? Listen. It's what you hearing? Listen. It's what you hearing? Listen.
Who the fuck is that guy?
Exo, give it to ya. Fuck, wait for you to get it on your own. Exo, deliver to ya. Knock, knock, open up the door. It's real. It's a non-stop.
It's recording.
Awesome. Because this needs to be saved for years to come, for generations in the future to listen to.
Like, it's just weird if you don't record it.
It is odd. It's like we're just talking to each other and no one's listening for 2 hours, which is essentially what happens even when we do record it.
That's true, because everybody, you're listening to MMA and stuff here at halfcredit.com. I'm Mike, that's Matt.
Welcome. Let's get started with some MMA, and then we'll move on to some stuff later. Maybe intersperse it here and there as well, depending on how the convo goes. This past weekend, we had two big shows, relatively big, I should say. We had UFC 220. It was in Boston at the TD Garden, home of the Celtics and Bruins. Attendance was 16,015 people with a gate of $2.4 million. So a good gate there for the UFC and the return to Boston. No shows in Massachusetts at all last year, so that might have had something to do with it. In the main event, we had Stipe Miocic defeating Francis Ngannou by unanimous decision, 50-44, 50-44, and 50-44. I was surprised by the outcome of this fight. I thought Ngannou would clip him and get a knockout win. I did not envision this going five rounds by any stretch of the imagination. If you had to pick one fight on this card that would have an early finish, I think everybody would have picked this fight. But Stipe was able to avoid danger, uses wrestling. He really tired Ngannou out against the cage and holding him down, pushing his head down. And Ngannou was just gassed after the first round and had nothing left. In the first, he looked explosive and came close on a couple shots, but also looked wild, like he was going in for the knockout, and then had no answers for Stipe the next four rounds and really just got dominated in a one-sided fight here.
Yeah, you know, I told everybody. This doesn't always work. This big black guy that just hits real hard, it gets exposed. That's exactly what happened here. He just didn't know how to really fight. He's not a mixed martial artist yet. Joe Rogan was talking on his show that people are saying that he doesn't train the ground at all, which is kind of impressive, actually, if he's at this level and he's not training jiu-jitsu.
Well, he did have one submission win. I mean,
yeah,
it
was a Sakuraba-style rolling Kimura also. So, yeah, I don't know what the fuck's going on with him there. He's also just big, and big guys like that are going to tire because he doesn't know how to wrestle, and he'll never know how to wrestle unless he really, really dedicated himself to it. But he's 31 years old, and I know that's young by heavyweight standards, but it's old by human standards. So, yeah, you know, he lost, and Stipe is also really good, and he's got a good style, and he's just such a... I think what you're really seeing with him is Velasquez was a big mobile heavyweight, but he was also a guy that was kind of on that cusp of almost a light heavyweight. Like, he wasn't a huge guy, whereas Stipe is always going to be a heavyweight, and he's still very athletic. And so we're seeing kind of a very athletic guy against a bunch of, you know, guys who used to be good, but now they're old, and, you know. Youth over experience? Beauty over age? I don't know.
Is Stipe the greatest heavyweight of all time now?
I don't know. I know it's a cop-out, because that's what we're supposed to do here. We're supposed to know things.
Hey, honesty is the best policy.
Is it?
Depending on what you've done.
That's true. It's not the best policy for me. He's up in the argument. I always get – whenever somebody's, like, in their immediate time, I'm a little hesitant to compare them historically because
– He could shit the bed. He could lose his next four fights and be retired. You never know.
Exactly. And that really shouldn't change anything just because, like, mm-hmm. If you lose a bunch at the end of your career, they all do. It just means that you're done. But, yeah, realistically, it's got to be just, you know – There's only a couple guys up there. There's him, Fyodor, Nogueira, Werdum, maybe. So, yeah, he's definitely in the conversation. If somebody wants to call him the greatest heavyweight ever, I don't really have a problem with that. I'll allow it.
Yeah, I mean, he's certainly in the mix to me. To me, I think the best heavyweight ever still is Prime Kane for me. I think he would beat Prime Stipe. I think the best Kane beats the best. And that's usually how I determine. Like, I was thinking about, how do you determine who the greatest fighter of all time is? And you think about, like, their prime, who was the best. Like, for lightweight, I would say BJ Penn. Welterweight, you say GSP. Anderson Silva at middleweight. Like, you kind of have this image of when they were at their best, would they beat this other guy at their best? And you kind of shift him around and you make a judgment call. And to me, I still think Kane at his prime doesn't gas and can hang with Stipe on the feet and maybe even get some takedowns and beat him up. But who knows? I mean, down the road, they might fight. If Kane can get healthy again, they might fight. But I don't think you're going to get your best Kane at this point because he's 5 years past his prime and he's had so many injuries. It's kind of a bummer, but we'll see what's next for old Stipe there. Do you think there's much to make of the drama with him and Dana White? There were a ton of pictures like cage side with like Dana with his head down looking all sullen as Stipe's pounded on Ngannou against the cage. And then when normally at the end of the fight, Dana puts the championship belt on the winner, Stipe kind of just grabbed the belt from him and gave it to like somebody in his camp to put around his waist. And then in the post-fight presser, somebody asked Stipe if he thought Dana White respected him, and he said he didn't really give a damn if he respected him or not. The only people that matter to him is his family and his teammates. So there's like a little there's some sort of drama dynamic there. Stipe held out for a while for his latest contract. So there's something there, I think. Maybe. I don't know.
Just talking shit. I mean, Stipe's maybe they're all getting a little cocky because of Conor, but he ain't Conor, and he's not. You know, he's making good money, but he's not. And he's making enough money that if you wanted to just say I'm done with this, you could do it. But you'd also be, you know, not like your Conor McGregor, where there's no difference in your lifestyle for Conor if he fights again. $100 million, $100 million, you could do anything you want forever. Whereas the difference between, say, $2 million in the bank, where you can live off that interest and be, you know, an okay life, but or $10 million, and suddenly you go, oh, that's a different class. So he's still got a ways to go before he gets to that, okay, I'm really done level. And in that case, he ain't going to do anything else. It's not like he's got some other skills. He's not marketable. Maybe you try some sort of boxing match. Maybe. I think, you know, maybe some of these guys think that's a thing, but come on. Like, nah, he does UFC and he's a fucking fireman. Like, yeah, he's going to shut up and do what he's told eventually.
Do you think there's any validity to his argument that they don't push him and that they wanted Ngannou to win? Because that was the build-up. Some of the build-up in the lead to this fight was that the UFC, the executives or whatever, UFC brass, wanted Ngannou to win because they thought he was more marketable and they could make more money with him, as opposed to Stipe, who's a little more reserved, a little more quiet, doesn't promote as much. And I wonder if they have an issue with him doing the firefighter thing on the side and treating UFC like it's his part-time job. Like, I wonder if there's anything with that where it's like, come on, dude, like, commit to this and make it your full-time gig. We'll all make more money. And he's reticent to do it for whatever reason.
I don't know. I mean, I feel like...
Because look at it this way. Sorry to cut you off. The guy's arguably the greatest heavyweight of all time. He's an American. He's a firefighter. Like, they could build him as this national hero. He's won 6 straight fights, 5 of them by knockout. He knocks out Mark Hunt, Andre Arlovski, Verdum, Overeem, Junior Dos Santos. And then he just dominates 50-44 on all 3 scorecards, the scariest human being ever to step in the cage. And there's, like, not much buzz. You know what I mean? There's some, but not a lot. And you got to wonder why. Is there – he just doesn't connect? Like, what's the deal? He should be the baddest man on the planet and build that way, and you never hear that with him.
There's probably – you know, there's something to the idea that he's not a giant star, obviously. As far as the UFC's responsibility, I would just say he's not, they're not really doing anything wrong, because it's not like I'm reading a lot of buzz from non-UFC sources for him either. Like, when you read every independent media article, they're all talking about Ngannou. He was just the exciting thing there. And I actually thought the UFC more or less pushed them the same. From what I saw, like, as far as, like, you know, UFC programming, they did a standard build for both guys, and they just hyped up Ngannou the only way you could, which is, hey, here's this big dude that hits real hard. Like, you have to hype the guy somehow. And Stipe is a little more well-rounded, a little easier to, you know, do a profile on him. So maybe it makes him come across not as scary or as much of a badass, but really what they're doing is just humanizing him. And I don't think this is some effort from the UFC. It's not like there's a huge difference between these two, I would say, as far as right now marketability goes. Maybe, I mean, if Ngannou had really done something crazy, perhaps. But, you know, Dana White's been around for a long time, and he's done this for a long time. And he ain't going to, you know, lose the plot or whatever, you know, go crazy over a Stipe Miocic potential. This isn't Connor. You know, when you go, okay, well, I get why he's in that guy's pocket. He's taking him to the next level. Like, best case scenario, Stipe, he's going to be a guy, but you're not going to go out of your way for either one of these two.
What do you think happens with Ngannou next? Is the story written on him? People are going to be able to take him down, out-wrestle him now? Or are they going to give him some favorable matchups and try and get him back in a title fight? How do you see it going for him from here on out?
I think he fights Junior Dos Santos. Oh, no, Dos Santos is done for a while, isn't he? Yeah. Have him fight somebody. I think he'll actually do okay because he is a heavyweight and that power is just always going to be there. Mm-hmm. Whether he comes back to the top, I kind of doubt that, actually, because it's not that he doesn't have the skill so much as he put together a long run. But now he's going to be fighting essentially only top-level guys. He's going to be fighting the Martin-type viewers or the Derek Lewis types where they're really tough. Mark Hunt, really tough, but, you know, you're going to have trouble looking good against them necessarily unless you really are at that next level, in which case, you know, talent always wins. But so far, you know, he's got all these wins, but most of them aren't really against anybody that mattered or were all that. Like he showed a lot. Like, okay, he pushed Overeem away and hit him with a big punch. You know, okay, but now he's going to have to do against Overeem types every fight out. He's not going to have, I don't even know, some jackass from Costco that they picked up who jerking off bums for $2 a head in the bathroom there in Minneapolis. You know, he's going to get a little punch.
You're talking about Brett Rogers?
Damn right I am.
That was obscure. Good memory. I'm sure you think about that a lot.
I don't forget about what grown men jerk off strangers in public bathrooms in Minneapolis. Let me tell you.
It's at the library. In the semi-main event, Daniel Cormier defeated Volkan Ozdemir by TKO 2 minutes in the second round. Cormier looked good, man. Obviously, we didn't know how good Voltron was, but Cormier didn't have a lot of trouble here. He was content striking with him, and that was where you would have thought Ozdemir would have an advantage just because he was bigger and longer and has that knockout power. But Cormier hung in there, hit some good shots, beat him up on the ground, almost had a choke at the end of the first, and was able to – I think he had his back and just landed shots from Mount with him lying on his belly, and that was it. But definitely a good dominant win for Cormier here.
Yeah, this I felt may have been the most impressive win he's had at light heavyweight, just because when it was over, like when he beat Rumble Johnson both times, there were times where I thought, especially in the first fight with Rumble, you're like, oh shit, he's in trouble. This is a tough fight. You know, he's really working hard here. Whereas this time, it looked like a walk in the park. Like, it was the sparring form. He was no danger. He did whatever he wanted. He was so calm in there. And he just took apart a guy who, in theory, is like a top three light heavyweight. We'll see. Time will tell really how much this matters, I guess, if Voltron does better. But for right now, it's like, holy crow. Kind of like, it was so dominant that it didn't even register as impressive at times because Voltron just faded away. Like, he wasn't there at all. He was just this generic creative fighter that they imported. And they even gave him a fucking dumb nationality, like Swiss. And then he lost.
Yeah, I mean, it was a good win. I mean, the problem with Cormier is always going to be John Jones. He's got those losses. Granted, his record is, you know, 21-1 now because one of them's a no contest. Chances are Jones was doing all sorts of stuff in the first one. He said he was all coked up for it. God only knows what else was in Jones's system then. But Cormier is a weird one because if John Jones doesn't exist, we're calling Daniel Cormier the greatest fighter of all time. And it's like, even knowing Jones's history and that he's probably cheated a lot of his career, you still feel like Cormier is just, I want to say second rate, but a notch below. John Jones, he's always going to be in John Jones' shadow, and it's kind of a bummer because he doesn't really deserve to be. He's 20-1, and he's beaten every guy he's had to fight. He's beaten, you know, Rumble, Gustafson. He beat the crap out of Dan Henderson back in the day, and then he had a lot of good wins at heavyweight too. So a good win for him here, but I just feel like that John Jones thing is always going to haunt him no matter what.
Yeah, you know what? He doesn't necessarily help his cause either, because the first thing he does when he wins is gets on his knees and talks about John Jones.
I know, he's obsessed.
Like, and it was, I thought it was really humanizing. I thought it made him kind of relatable. I'm like, okay, this guy, he is a person here. Like, he's really, you know, being honest and real. But then I'm like, yeah, but dude, like, you're just reminding me that you are second best, that you are not the real champion. And I don't know, this is the kind of first we've ever really had, I guess, with a champion in MMA like John Jones, where he's so young and so dominant that he's been able to miss years and still be so impressive in the interim. That you're like, nah, he's still the best. This is like some bullshit where a guy takes a couple years off. You're like, well, you know, it's been a while. Or, you know, he's 34, 35 years old right now. Maybe he's not what he once was, like BJ Penn coming back, whatever. It's like, nah, everybody expects John Jones just to come back and take the title, and it doesn't matter who has it. And
yeah.
I think some of that's also the fact that he still has beaten everybody in the fucking division. The division's not turning over. If there was some new big up and coming guy like the, you know, light heavyweight Francis Ngannou who was destroying everyone, I think that would change things a little bit. But there isn't. You know, Cormier's just beating the same fucking retreads that Jones did, and then you throw in a Volkan Oezdemir like anyone's gonna give a fuck.
To me, it's even more impressive because Cormier came back after that loss where he got knocked out, beat up bad by Jones. He's 38 now. He's fighting a guy nobody even knows. And he came in there to fight and look great, so I give him props in this case, for sure. What do you think where do we go from here? Because there's talk of Miocic versus Cormier, like a super fight, and neither guy really has a real strong contender. Do you think they go that direction, or do you think, you know, there's somebody else for Miocic at heavyweight and somebody else for Cormier at light heavyweight?
Well, my normal hatred of these fucking mega fights, it's just permeating the sport at all pores or whatever, coming through the pores, permeating the pores. I don't know. Use the word permeate, people. This one actually feels like there's a little bit of justification for it, because there really isn't anybody in either division I'm interested in. I kind of would rather them just go on their runs, but because of Cormier's past success at heavyweight, this one really does feel like a credible super fight. Like when BJ fought George St. Pierre, we were like, dude, he was a fucking champion at that division before. And he's done well. Let's see what he's got to offer. So, yeah, in that sense, I kind of wouldn't mind seeing it. Cormier doesn't sound like he's all that gung-ho for it. He's kind of been like, hey, man, those guys are so much bigger than me. And I think that he's in a good place. I don't know. He is such an incredible competitor. There's no doubt about that. He goes and goes and goes, and that Olympic mentality carries him through everything. But outside of the actual competition, he does seem to come across as very realistic and composed about his position in the sport. Like, when you get down afterwards, you're like, oh, man, John Jones is so fucking great. I'm just grateful I have a title now. Like, that's not the kind of guy that I expect to say, yeah, and I'm going to go fight Stipe. It's more like, I'm just, yeah, maybe if I was John Jones, I'd go do it. But, you know, I'm not. So I'm just going to fight, I don't know, is Shogun still alive? Yeah, bring him up. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, to me, for Cormier, the number one contender has to be Gustafson. And then Stipe, I would do Kane. Like, I know Verdum's in the mix there. He's got a couple wins, but to me, that Kane fight's kind of a dream fight for me. And then Gustafson had that close decision. Gustafson's got a couple wins under his belt now. So that kind of makes sense. I don't think either fight really draws that well. But competitively, I think they're the two best fights they could do if they're going to stick, you know, to their divisions.
You know, I would do those if you could. Who knows with Velasquez. But I would do them on the same show again. Build this link between Stipe and Cormier. And, you know, neither one of these guys should be drawing huge on their own. But you build that storyline. If they each get one more win, you can credibly say they're done with this division. There's nothing left. And then Cormier's like, hey, I'm going out on my shield, man. This will be my last fight. I'm going to try it. And if you're, you know, Stipe, you go, hey, I got a big win, and this is a, you know, a real unique challenge for me. I can't just say that I'm fighting these big guys. Like, this is a world-class wrestler. Let's see what happens. So let's pencil that in for July of 2019.
And Cormier says he does plan to retire at, like, March of 2019. So he wants to retire by 40. The fact that he's still going at 38 the way he has with all that wrestling and everything he's put his body through is pretty, pretty damn impressive. Cause he got into the sport late. He was like 30 when he started MMA. He had never done any striking up to that point. So Cormier is the real deal, man. The rest of this card's pretty rough, man. There's not a lot of, Q rating, low Q rating for the rest of the show.
Al Hassan knocked out the fucker like there was no tomorrow, and one of the featherweights, Burgos, got knocked out by Cotter like a motherfucker. Otherwise, show's ass.
Yeah, Rob Font had a good win over Thomas Almeida, too.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That was the kick I was thinking of. Yeah.
But a lot of decisions, a lot of fighters you've never heard of. Your buddy Islam Makhachev beat T-Bow by knockout in 57 seconds in the first on Fight Pass. As far as bonuses go, Cater versus Burgos got fight of the night, and then performances went to Daniel Cormier and Abdul Razak Al-Hassan. So yeah, that was UFC 220. I haven't heard anything about buy rate. I know you were all gung-ho, like 500,000. You think that's still 513 is your number. You're still going on record with that.
Yep.
I think that's high.
I bought it.
Did I? I split it. I split it with someone.
And I don't usually buy them, but like this one just felt like when I couldn't like find a stream right away, and I was on drugs also, but my brain's just like, I got to watch this show. And I'm like, fuck it. It's $65. I'll buy it. And I just feel like it had that big city, it's in Boston. You saw the gate was $2.5 million or whatever. Like, that's a good size gate. This feels like it connected. And I think Cormier might be a bigger star than we give him credit for because he's had the Jones deal and he's on TV all the time. And let's face it, everybody in Boston is so fucking happy that weekend. Oh, no, they were on their way to being happy that weekend. And they knew what was up. So, yeah, they just started pre-gaming early.
Maybe. And then also on Saturday night, we had Bellator. What number was this?
Hey, dickhead. Put the fucking chalk down. Not up your nose. Get up. What fucking number Bellator was it? Then ask TJ. Hey, B-Ray. Yeah, you. Hey, my man. What fucking number Bellator was it? Oh, I will fucking fuck you up. You throw a fucking watermelon crust at me? That's some racist shit, motherfucker. 194? 5?
192.
Fucking son of a bitch. Back in the hole you go, motherfucker. Yeah, you little fairy. F-A-I-R-E as in a mythical creature. Yeah, I'm not a homophobe. You're not real. That actually works.
Once in third grade, I lost in a spelling bee because I confused ferry the boat with ferry, like the little thing in Peter Pan. I was pissed. Because I spelled it right. And they said I spelled it wrong. But I think they were so dumb they didn't know I was spelling the other one.
I'm presuming you spelled the mythical fairy.
No, I did the boat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fairies are, you know, you got to go to the Vineyard, Nantucket, on the ferry.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's fucking awesome. I've never been on a ferry.
They're islands. Oh, yes, how else would you get to them? I mean, I guess you could fly. Small airports, though.
Well, I've only ever been on like one ferry, and that was from Hong Kong to Macau. Otherwise, if I go anywhere, it's just by boat. Like, I wouldn't like drive my car onto a thing. I've never driven a car onto a boat. That'd be fucking weird.
I have.
Yeah, I would just like get a little like speedboat or something, just fucking putter over there.
It's easier to just drive your car. Where are you going to get a boat?
I don't know. That's why I don't really go on islands very often.
Well, you're also in the middle of the country. Yes. Yeah. Sometimes you get offended when people say things like you're landlocked. You've got to...
Oh, no, I'm fine with that.
You get defensive about flyover states. So you're
that's
weird.
Different than saying that I'm landlocked. I'm aware of geography, kind of.
Well, I can't go down this path with you right now. So anyway, we had Bellator 192.
Wow, I've heard that so many times in my life from so many people.
On Saturday, January 20th, this is at the Forum in Inglewood, always up to no good, California. In the main event, we had Chael Sonnen defeating Quinton Rampage Jackson by unanimous decision, 29-28 on all three scorecards. Quinton Jackson did weigh in at 253 pounds, so he weighed more than – what was the – oh, Trump? He weighed definitely weighs more than – I wouldn't say he definitely weighed – I bet they weigh about the same.
Maybe.
I bet Trump's closer to 300 than people realize.
I don't know about that. I mean, he is –
Dude, he's a large individual.
Yeah, but he's still – he's tall. He's 6'2", 6'3", or whatever it is. And by the way, I haven't addressed that, I don't think, but this whole idea that Trump is, like, lying about his height so that he could not be obese, it's the dumbest fucking conspiracy ever. If he wanted to just lie about something so he wouldn't be called obese, you just lie about your weight. It's a lot fucking easier just to say, oh, no, I weighed 239, for you to be like, no, I weighed 234. Oh, okay. As opposed to just changing your height. You can't do that. Also, I don't care what your driver's license says for your height either. Mine still says I'm 5'7" and 150 pounds because I never updated it from when I was 16. Anyways.
What did you think about Chael beating Quinton here? Unanimous decision 29-28 on all
three. It was sad. Everybody involved was sad. Rampage is just beyond fat. He doesn't give a fuck. Chael doesn't have shit to do besides just wrestle him down and really not do anything after that. And then Chael afterwards is playing pro wrestler and still flexing, and he's just selling all this snake oil. It's kind of beautiful in many respects. Like, this is Chael Sonnen is exactly what Donald Trump would be if he had been into amateur wrestling when he was a child. Like, that's exactly what it's like. It's Bellator, you know? Everything involved in that promotion is kind of sad. It's a place where dreams go to die.
I even think physically, like, I forget what Sonnen weighed in at, like 230 or something, 220 or 220
something. Yeah, looked fine.
Yeah, physically, I was like surprised because he wasn't like flabby or anything, but he was carrying like an extra, you know, 40 pounds than he did in his prime when he was fighting at middleweight. But he didn't physically look out of shape, which is interesting.
He looked kind of like what he did at light heavyweight, and it's the same way, he just didn't cut. Yeah, it's not a huge jump up there. I mean, it's sad to say that a middleweight walking into a cage fight at 225 pounds isn't that big of a deal, but hey, that's what life is unless you're Uriah Hall, which you're not going to walk into a cage anytime soon.
Yeah. Do you see that he was claiming like he had a mini heart attack or something, too?
A mini stroke, yeah.
Yeah, what the fuck? That's normal. And then in the co-main, we had Rory McDonald defeating – actually, before we get to that, the winner now, Chael Sonnen, is going to face either Fedor or Frank Mir, unless one of them is injured and can't go on to the next round.
That's beautiful.
Can you imagine, like, Frank Mir versus Sonnen? Like, Mir's gonna literally... Mir looked fat as hell. Did you see him?
He looked like
squaring
he
up with
burn.
Fedor. I was like, holy
like
shit.
Fucking like the alien that just impregnated him. Get ready to pop.
He's gonna have to cut some weight, man, to make 265. He's weighing in at 265, no doubt.
Oh my gosh. I mean, forget about cutting weight. This man needs to... he might die just like running down to the cage. He's so fat. This was awful. He'll still probably beat him, but still.
I would pick Mir over Fedor at this point. But do you think... like, I feel like Mir's way too big for Sonnen. Like, that seems like a mismatch to me.
I have no idea. It's
the
shape these fuckers are in. Who knows?
But just based on the weight, like, Mir's going to outweigh him by 50 pounds.
So, well, he's going to weigh in a little, only about 10 pounds heavier than Rampage.
I know, but I don't know. I don't think Rampage has the grappling or the ground game that would give Sonnen trouble. Like,
no.
Sonnen's not going to want to stand with Mir or go to the ground with him. What the hell does Sonnen do in that fight?
Probably just wears him out in 3 minutes and then waits for Mir to fall over.
It would be amazing if Sonnen won the whole tourney. That would be awesome.
He really could. He could win it just by virtue of being in shape.
Yeah, I was looking. I saw something about alternatives for they've already got guys lined up. I think one is Congo. I should see if I can find
them. Yeah, I saw something about that, too. They haven't admitted that they're going to bring in Glover Teixeira to do it, but we all know it's coming.
Czech Congo and Javi Ayala are set as alternates.
Oh, great. Man, I was wondering what Javi Ayala was doing.
Yeah,
I was
we
hoping
needed,
he'd make an appearance.
They found someone fatter than Mir. And Rampage.
Roy Nelson.
Roy Nelson, yeah.
There's a lot of fat guys in this tournament. It's a lot of dudes. It's basically a bunch of fat guys and some blown up, like, middleweights.
Who would now look fat.
Yeah.
Anyway, then in the co-main, we had Rory McDonald defeating, I lost my place here, Douglas Lima, 48, 47, 49, 45, 49, 46. So some kind of weird scores there. I had it 48, 47 for McDonald. I had him winning the first two, then Lima in the third and fourth, and then McDonald in the fifth. Essentially, the story of the fight was McDonald was able to get takedowns and kind of hold Lima down, and Lima did nothing on his back, just kind of held guard. The ref stood him up a couple times. It was not an exciting fight by any stretch. People are talking like this was some great fight. I was not feeling it at all. At one point, McDonald had a real nasty, I guess it was like a hematoma on his shin. He was taking some leg kicks from Lima, but gutted it out in the fifth, got a takedown, and just rode it out for, 4 minutes in the fifth. And Lima did nothing from his back. He, like, did some butterfly guard, but really tried very little to get up or get out of the position he was in. I don't know if he thought he was ahead on the cards or what, but not the best strategy on his part, not the greatest fight ever. The one takeaway I had was that McDonald gutted it out with he had an alien looking leg, at the end of this fight and was able to get the win.
We call them, undocumented shin bones, I'll have you know.
What does that mean?
Alien. Oh. Anyways,
I meant like from another planet.
I don't know. I get it. He won the fight. It was a professional win. And that's all there is to it. He hasn't really set the world on fire here in Bellator. He's just been Rory McDonald, which is very good, but rarely ultra-impressive. He'll go fight someone named Willick. He's a tough dude. When you don't feel emotions, you also don't really feel pain. So it works out well for him. Got his win over Douglas Lima, and then people can is the best welterweight in the world in Bellator. It's like, no, fuck you. You beat Douglas Lima. Like, nah, I'm not going to give you that shit. Tyron Woodley, say what you will, like, Damian Maia, Stephen Thompson are amazing back-to-back victories throwing Robbie Lawler. Holy shit, that's really good. Oh, also, he beat Rory McDonald. So, yeah, fuck him.
McDonald claimed this was the toughest guy he's ever fought. Do you buy that?
No, because Robbie Lawler beat the fuck out of him and knocked him out. It broke his will to live with a punch. So no, this is not the toughest fight. If this is your toughest fight, which is a dude doing a bunch of butterfly guards, you're a fucking dumbass.
That's good analysis. Michael Chandler defeated Goichi Yamauchi by unanimous decision. Chandler got rocked a couple times on the feet in this one, but managed to get takedowns in every round and basically won on points, I thought.
Yeah, I don't really remember the fight that much. You're talking third from the top on Bellator. Yeah.
That's what happened. Aaron Pico defeated Shane Crutchton with a body shot at 37 seconds of the first round. I don't know much about Crutchton or how good he is. I'm assuming he's not that great, but Pico looked good and landed a couple body shots. And the one that he finished him with was like this real wide, loopy shot, like almost like a hook uppercut sort of deal that just destroyed Crutchton. Crutchton went down and the fight was over. It was an impressive win. Pico kind of had this weird dance celebration at the end that there were some, I saw some memes out there of and little videos, people snipped things together. It was a good win for him. He's now 2-1. Again, the question is going to be what kind of chin does he have and can he take a shot? So time will tell.
But for right now, that's what you wanted to do, to go, is go out there and just fucking blitz. I mean, that body shot was, it was a hell of a shot. It was really well executed. You would not think this guy comes from a wrestling background, the way he fights. But it's a young guy. But I get this. What we get, this is what you got to do. He probably will live up to the hype because he's a hell of an athlete. But you know, he's an amateur basically. We're watching. You know, you can judge a guy based on his first two or three fights in his career. Let's wait until about three or four more fights when I bet they'll be like, he's the MMA Lomachenko. Everybody, let's see what happens, and blah, blah, blah.
For what it's worth, Pico is 21 now, and that first loss he had was at lightweight, and now his last two fights are at featherweight. Who knows if he's going to be able to make featherweight much longer. Sometimes when you get a little older, you can't do that anymore. But maybe featherweight's the better division for him, and he's going to get a little bit of a run here in Bellator. And then in a year or two, UFC will steal him.
And that first fight doesn't matter. I don't care lightweight, featherweight. He got hit by, like, the first punch that was ever thrown at his face in a professional fight. And it hit him. So it's like, that's one in a million bad luck. And he's since come back from that. He doesn't seem gun-shy. So I'll give the guy the benefit of the doubt that he's going to be the next great thing, and he beats Conor McGregor, and that's it.
That'd be good. In the opener, Henry Corrales defeated Georgi Karakhanian by unanimous decision. Also in the prelims, we had Devin Brock defeating Conry Gracie, which is
Hoyce's
son. Yeah, bad debut for him. Not as good as his dad.
Well, he might be, actually.
Well, he could. He probably is. But I'm just saying, the start to his pro MMA career is not the same as his father's.
Yeah, it's probably fair to say. You know, losing on your first fight ever in the undercard that nobody saw in Bellator versus winning the most famous cage fighting tournament of all time. Yeah.
Bellator's funny. They love having people's kids fight for them. Like, I can't wait for Kimbo's kid to fight Hoyce's kid. That'll be good.
Oh, man, they could throw in, there's so many of them. Yeah, they got Antonio McKee's kid is in there. And
is Couture's kid still fighting for them?
Has Ryan Couture fought for them?
It should just have an all-kids show.
I'm guessing one of those fighters, Ken Shamrock's their dad. They just don't know it. So, yeah, they're doing pretty good.
All right, and I think that's it for Bellator. In other news, we have – you're really sucking on that thing over there, huh?
No idea what you're talking about.
Nate Diaz is teasing people on Instagram. He put out a bunch
of – slowly, one piece of clothing at a time every day for 7 days.
He put out a bunch of Instagram pictures, I believe last night. In one of them, he wrote, sick of sitting around waiting for you fuckers to do shit. There's no excitement in this fight shit. Step your games up. I'll see you around May, June. Sincerely, the real champ. And then a middle finger emoji. just
it's,
to.
It sounds like how like rappers announce themselves going back, like y'all forgot, but I'm back now. You know, to show you guys how this thing is. This whole scene is boring. It's like you're a professional athlete, in theory. I mean, that really does undermine the idea that MMA is a sport when you have to say Nate Diaz, professional athlete, and one doesn't really roll off the tongue all that smoothly. But in theory, you're an athlete. Athletes aren't like, hey, you know what, man, baseball got really fucking boring without me. I'm back to make it exciting. Like, you're like, no, I'm back to win a World Series. I guess some guys say that stuff, but they're morons. One thing is, Nate Diaz, not the brightest tool in the shed.
I got a lot of likes. I will, let me refresh here. Let's see how many likes we're at. As I look this up earlier. Oh, it's an old picture of it. It's a screenshot. It got over 157,000 likes as of whenever. Sounds like it. For people to like look at his picture flicking off the crowd.
I don't know. It's Instagram and he's Nate Diaz. Like, some of these guys have so many millions of followers on Instagram. Like, I have no frame of reference on it.
Here we go. Let's see. Me neither. But it sounds good. Yeah, 157,000 likes. Anywho, presuming he comes back at lightweight, it kind of jams things up a little bit. It was announced that they're going to do – did we talk about last week with Khabib and Ferguson? Had that broken yet?
Yes, we did talk about that, I think.
Okay, so that's official. They're going to do Khabib versus Ferguson.
That's my justification for not writing about it.
A lot of people were asking Dana – what does this mean for the lightweight title picture? Is Conor stripped? And Dana didn't say Conor was stripped, but they also said that Ferguson and Khabib was not for the interim title. It was for the lightweight title. None of this really matters, and no one gives a shit. It's kind of convoluted. But throwing Diaz in the mix complicates it even more because, like, you would presume if he came back, he's coming back for a big fight, either a title fight or Conor. I don't see him coming back to fight Edson Barboza.
It is Diaz, though. Sorry, guys, something caught my throat. It is Diaz, so
gross.
Still can't talk.
Ugh.
I was drinking some water. Went down the wrong pipe. I think this might be the end.
Like it's in your lungs. You know, if you can talk, you're not actually choking, right?
That's what they say before they drown. I'm okay. I can swim. And then they drown. Yeah, you know, Nate coming back will be fun. That'll be something to see.
Yes.
I hope Conor just gets rid of the belt. I'm bored with it. The best theory I heard was that, and it probably makes sense if you're the UFC, there's no reason to say that this is for, like, that we stripped Conor until the day before this show happens. Because what do you want to do, strip Conor the title and then have Khabib fuck it up again and be like, okay, so we had this guy who's a real champion. He didn't fight for over a year and a half, so we took the other guy who was the interim champion, we made him the real champion on the presumption that he would defend it against this guy, but this guy fucked up and missed weight, so now this guy goes back to interim champion, and you go back to real champion, and we'll do this whole song and dance again in 3 months, and I bet that was a real good chance that would happen. I think this is Dana learning his lesson that too many titles out there. I say that, but he's not learned a lesson at all.
What would you think of the idea of doing Conor Nate 3, winner of that fights the winner of Khabib and Ferguson?
That's great. It'll just end up being Conor will come down to the cage with his belt. He will tell everybody, I'm the real champion. Everyone will go, oh yeah, last time I saw you fight, you knocked a dude out in the main event of Madison Square Garden, so yeah, you are the champion and you never lost, and you just beat Nate Diaz. And if Nate beats Conor, he's going to absolutely be like, I'm the real champion. It's all fucked. They have created a situation to two titles, and it's very reminiscent of the classic Shawn Michaels Razor Ramon feud, and I think that the only way this gets solved is by ladder match.
Do you see Nate coming back in May or June, or do you think it's bullshit? Is he going to claim, they're not giving me enough money, it's not worth my time, or do you think it's legit and he will fight? Because sometimes the Diaz brothers say things and then they don't come true.
Yeah, it would be very Diaz-like, though, to say, I'm coming back in May or June. They say, come back and he fights end of May. And then, like, when there's a giant show, say, in July, like there always is, he's like, how come that I'm not on the big show? So this idiot would come back a month before when he should.
He might. A guy who's not coming back anytime soon is Robert Whittaker. Apparently he has a staph infection, and that's why he was pulled from UFC 221. If you remember, that's the show in Australia. He was supposed to fight Luke Rockhold as undisputed middleweight champion, but obviously he got this staph infection. Now it's Rockhold versus Yoel Romero for the interim middleweight title. Regardless of all that, the staph infection is apparently pretty nasty. Dana White was quoted as saying on TSN, Whitaker had staph infection in his stomach. From what I understand, it wasn't treated properly and started to eat away parts of his organs. He's in serious condition. It's going to be a minute before he's back, I think. Hopefully it turns around quick, but that stuff is life-threatening if not treated the right way.
I mean, that's really fucked up. When Whittaker announced that he was pulling out of the fight, his announcement didn't seem like that severe. It almost seemed like he was unsure of why he was injured or something. So this idea that he's in this mega pain, that's a bit troubling. Staph infection should be something you can treat. This isn't uncommon. I understand that Australia is far behind America in every way, shape, and form. Perhaps they put the medicine on backwards. I'm not really sure. Maybe they got it from a kangaroo. Kangaroo meat tainted the... I don't know. I'm trying to work all these things in there. That's fucked up, but I suspect that he'll be on the same cycle as the winner of those other two bozos.
Yeah, I mean, that does not sound good at all. In other Dana White news, he was asked some other questions over the weekend. He was making media rounds for the show.
Why do people keep doing that?
Asking Dana White questions?
Yeah, they know.
Because usually he gives it. Yeah, he usually gives entertaining answers, I would say. Asked, here, you might know the answers to these already. I was going to say, you be Dana, and we could play a game. We could see how close you could impersonate him.
Fuck you, you fucking cunt.
That's right. Will Brock Lesnar return? What did Dana White say?
Dana says, well, he's quoted as saying yes. I don't think he's actually saying yes. I think Dana was saying yes in the sense of, I don't know what the fuck's going on anymore. Sure, Brock's coming back.
Dana said, I think he'll give it one more run. I just think Brock loves to fight. What did he say about Ronda returning? Will she come back?
Yes.
He said, no, she won't fight again. I love that woman. We have an amazing relationship. What she's done for the sport and for this company, created millions of female fans around the world. Ronda can do whatever the hell she wants to do.
Oh, yeah. I thought he said everybody's coming back.
Will Conor McGregor return to
Octagon? Twice.
He said, I don't know. I don't wait for anybody. I run my business, I keep rolling, and that's it. The kid's got $100 million. Who knows? He might never fight again.
I totally thought that he said he'd fight.
He did it. Apparently, he's a flip flopper like John Kerry. Will Conor McGregor box Floyd Mayweather again?
I don't know. Anything could happen.
He said, "I wouldn't do that fight again. I would never work with Showtime again. I'd never work with that weasel again," referring to Steven Espinoza. And lastly, will Floyd Mayweather enter the Octagon?
I don't know. Anything could happen.
He said, I think that's the only way people would care this time. Do you know how many people want to see that guy take a shin to the face? It's a legitimate question.
It's true. Bit of a tough sell if you're going to be like, hey, Floyd, you should come in MMA and fight. See, there's a lot of people that want to see you just get kicked in the fucking head with bare bone. You've never been hit with the bone before? Oh, dude, it hurts like a motherfucker. You're going to look really dumb. Here's some money.
All right. I think it's about that time. It's USADA time here. It's on halfguarded.com. We had two this past week. Let's start with Cynthia Calvillo. It was announced Wednesday that she has been notified of a potential UFC anti-doping policy violation after failing a USADA drug test Sulfar or carboxy tetrahydrocannabinol, also known as THC.
Oh, Jesus.
You're familiar with that, right?
Heard of it.
The positive test stems from an in-competition sample collected in relation to the December 30th bout, which took place in Vegas. THC is described in the release as a metabolite of marijuana and or hashish. Calvillo is expected to go through an adjudication process with USADA and the NAC, which also has jurisdiction in the case, to determine what sanctions she will receive. Can you believe, like, yeah, weed is still apparently an issue when it's in competition, yeah.
I mean, I thought that they had basically thrown their hands up and be like, look, morons, we set this bar real high. It's still illegal, but you gotta really be screwed up. I mean, let's put this in perspective here. The Diaz brothers are passing these tests now, okay? So if you get caught, I don't know what to tell you.
Apparently, it's like 180 nanograms per milliliter, and she must have tested above that real close to fight night. She must have been doing some bong rips or something the day before. I don't know what she was doing.
I'm going to chalk it up to her being a woman. In the sense of,
okay,
not just being sexist, although that's
unusual.
That's always a consideration. Okay. Also, I think that so much of what we men and gym fighters, people in gyms know, is based on male physique and, you know, male timelines, and women just metabolize things differently, and it's different. I could see people being like, oh yeah, we fucked up. Sorry, turns out that because you have boobies, you're gonna possess it longer.
The most recent case of a UFC fighter for failing for marijuana was Kelvin Gastelum. He was flagged by USADA in April, which led to a win over Vitor being overturned to a no contest and his booking against Anderson Silva at UFC 212 being canceled. And then I think Silva tested positive for steroids too for that a little while later, when he was supposed to fight Bisping. In the end, Gastelum ended up getting a 3-month suspension, which is probably how much time he would have been off anyway. So it's a slap on the wrist if you are found guilty anyways.
Yeah, well, hopefully Nevada figures out some way to give him the lightest sentence humanly possible.
Her?
Say. Yeah. Hey, look, I don't want to gender somebody, okay?
Okay. The person.
I think I did just misgender her. But I don't know. I don't know her preferred pronouns yet. I don't want to be rude. Yeah, I hope she gets not very much, because that's really stupid. I mean, it's not even, especially in Nevada. My gosh, it's recreationally legal there.
Yeah.
She's an idiot, though.
It's kind of crazy, because, I mean, it's not performance enhancing. Who gives a shit? But whatever. Then somebody who did get a pretty hefty suspension was Francisco Rivera. He was suspended for 4 years by USADA. This one's awesome. This is my favorite one in a long time. So he was issued a 4-year suspension by an independent arbitrator. He's already gone through arbitration. This is a done deal. This was stemming from his July 2016 positive drug test for the banned substance clenbuterol. That suspension is retroactive to August 2016, so he wouldn't be able to fight again until 2020. Clenbuterol is the one that they often find in, like, Chinese and Mexican meat. A lot of guys have failed for that reason and been able to use that as an excuse, and I guess it's a legit thing that can happen. But the issue with Rivera essentially was he tested positive for clenbuterol and then claimed it was because he was vacationing in Mexico. And then they asked him for documentation about this trip to Mexico and he couldn't provide it. Then he falsified some documents and had, like, things backdated and was trying to cover his tracks and all this bullshit to avoid getting suspended. And I guess USADA felt like he failed and then he tried to conceal it and hide it, essentially.
He Nixoned himself.
Yeah. There's audio of this?
The cover-up's always worse than the crime. And sometimes. In this case, you know, the moron, if you just said nothing, you would have got 2 years or whatever. Instead, he went out there and got 4 years for, like, really being bad. Like, and I get it. I understand why they do that. I think it seems a little harsh, actually, as I say that out loud, because they're just lying to you. It's like, okay, we want to discourage you from lying. Yeah, that's really Orwellian. Just like, we're going to control you, and you better tell us the truth, or we're going to really punish you. It's like, I'm allowed to lie to you guys. You have to prove me guilty. I should be able to lie all I want.
Yeah, it's a weird one, because...
Like, you don't go to jail. Like, you usually don't go to jail because you plead not guilty, and, like, right. You lose the case. Well, actually, you do. That's not true at all. You could tend to get plea deals. So, my whole point is invalid, and I should shut up.
I mean, there's... something to what you're saying, but I think in another way, because what does this do? Like, his career's over. I think he's 36 now. He wouldn't be able to fight again until he's 39. It wasn't like he was some huge star or something. He had a few exciting fights, I can remember, but is this really going to get other fighters to stop, like, taking PEDs? Like, what's the benefit here? Will they be more likely to fess up next time because they heard some story about Francisco Rivera and clenbuterol? Like, does this set a precedent where guys will be more honest? Like, I don't see the benefit of suspending him for 4 years. This is his first failure, and his career's over because of it, because he lied and tried to cover it up. I mean, that's kind of their job in going through arbitration, trying to figure that stuff out. Is this true? Is this what really happened? Like, they believe John Jones' dick pill story, and it sounds like they're going to believe his Chinese Coke story. And it sounds like every time, a lot of times when it goes to arbitration, they have some sort of excuse, and I'm guessing a lot of times the excuse is bullshit, and they accept it and reduce the sentence. This guy, they didn't accept his reasoning and gave him a longer suspension because of it.
When you compare it and contrast like that to John Jones, it is really startling. It really hammers at home, because Jones' stuff are so obviously bullshit. He's so clearly lying about this. And I feel for Rivera here because, or whatever it's Rivera, right?
Yes. No.
Yeah. Okay. Because he's probably just a dumb, uneducated Brazilian. He doesn't know what he's doing.
He might be American. I think he's like Mexican or something.
Okay. Like, that's not American. Not yet, Nancy Pelosi. So, yeah, but the other way, I'm sure he's just some dumb moron, doesn't know what he's doing, is just, like, listen to people. You know, I think he's Brazilian. I don't know why I'm thinking that.
Because you're racist.
Yeah, it's true. But yeah. Anyway, it just, like...
He was born in California.
It just seems really weird that, you know, like, if he had said it, one thing, but did he try to present this evidence in arbitration? And if so, that's really bizarre that it would be so easily disproven. You couldn't just be like, yeah, we just drove down there. My buddy said we drove down there, we had some food. Unless the guy, like, crossed the border illegally, which is cool these days. But I don't know. It seems really, really fucking dumb.
The whole thing is weird. It says, prior to arbitration, a USADA investigation revealed that several pieces of evidence presented by Rivera to USADA and the arbitrator had been falsified to support the athlete's claims that the substance had originated from contaminated meat in Mexico. That falsification became the foundation upon which Rivera's protracted suspension was based, as under the UFC anti-doping policy, deceitful or obstructive conduct intended to avoid the detection or adjudication of an anti-doping policy violation may be regarded as aggravating circumstances, which can lead to an increased period of ineligibility. So, I mean, it's in their anti-doping policy, I guess. It's there.
Oh, it's always in that. All sports have that stuff where you get extra trouble if you try to fake it. In theory, right. Again, to tell people, you know, to discourage it. I always love legalese like that. When instead of just saying, like, in plain language, you're not allowed to lie to us, it's right. Deceitful.
Right.
Like, it's just, why did you couldn't, like, go through your thesaurus and find anything better? You just stopped at deceitful. Not malcontents or anything like that. Obfuscate. Yeah. Just use obfuscate. That's a good one when you want to sound like a dick.
It's funny because you know guys have tried to hide stuff in the past. I'm just trying to think of another example.
John
where
Jones.
They, no, I know.
Silva.
I'm trying to think of an example where they strung a guy up for this sort of thing.
Oh, never.
And this is the first one, right?
One fucking dude fought like 13 times since he appealed his suspension.
Right, but nobody's gotten busted for this deceitful, lying, trying to cover up sort of thing. This is the first one.
I think so. There might be one dude, but...
I can't think of one.
He was definitely brown if it happened. This is exactly, they're just making an example of the brown man.
Either way, Rivera's career is probably over at this point because he lied about it. The other thing that's really weird about it, nobody fails for clenbuterol. Like, nobody takes that. It's always by accident. You never hear of somebody intentionally taking clenbuterol.
He probably really did get bad meat. Maybe it's like his brother's restaurant, and his brother's operating it illegally in America because, you know, he's an illegal immigrant from Mexico, and he didn't want to rat his brother out because that would expose him to ICE, and then the county health inspector would show up and see that they're just using rat meat, and so that wouldn't be good for anybody. So he fell on the sword. I mean, it's Francisco Rivera. His career is over, but I would say, did it ever really begin?
Clenbuterol is weird too because it's usually used for like asthma, right? Isn't that what like somebody was saying in Brock's camp or something? Like he was using an inhaler or something, and it's got some like trace elements of steroids to help you breathe.
It's not
a super effective like PED. Like
that's
that, right. Nobody
those,
feels
those high level fucking godly athletes that have asthma. Yeah, that does go around MMA. Mixed martial artists are known for asthma attacks. I remember that one fight when, in between rounds, Brock's like, I need my asthma. And they gave him the inhaler. He's like, oh, I can breathe again. And then that other guy that was so allergic to peanuts that he broke out in hives during the middle of a fight because somebody's eating peanuts in the crowd and almost went into anaphylactic shock. But thankfully, they had the epinephrine pen there. Yeah, fighters are real pansy-ass fuckers.
Well, we'll never see Francisco Rivera again in the UFC. Sad day. Somebody who we will see, hopefully, is Timothy Johnson. He has set up a GoFundMe to get his cornermen to Brazil. Apparently, he's having financial issues getting them down there. So he's asking fans to give him money to bring his cornermen down. He wrote on
How much will it take to buy his mustache?
His mustache is looking good. He wrote, everyone knows I'm a last-minute guy, but I had a couple sponsors not contribute this time around and am stuck between a rock and a hard place. Anything helps as dawn is approaching. Thanks in advance, and please share. It says, click here to support Help Get My Corners to Brazil, organized by Timothy Johnson. Let's see how much money he has raised so far.
$37.
Somebody else had tried to do this too. He has exceeded his goal. He was looking for $4,000, and he's gotten $4,322. Someone apparently sent him a $2 bill, which I find odd.
Asshole.
Do you? What do you make of this?
I'm the UFC. If I'm the UFC right now. I'm going. Yeah, we didn't need to fucking give you that extra money, did we? You just found it on your own.
Yeah. What do you think this says? Like, does this make the UFC look bad? Does it make Johnson look bad? He's begging fans for money. Or UFC should be paying guys a little more or paying for cornermen to get down there. But, like, what's your take on this?
This has happened a number of times. Like, you hear, like, not necessarily the GoFundMe, but you've heard about guys talking about, like, oh, I had to pay for my own corner. Because the UFC gives you, I think, one corner, depending on where you're on the card, and then maybe two or three if you're higher up. So he probably just wants more than just one guy down there, which I understand. That's fine, but it's not like he's being treated any differently than anybody else on the card. They're all pretty much they're equal in that regard. I do think it looks bad when a guy's whole team isn't coming down there. But on the other hand, in baseball, the teams bring their own trainers. You see, the Yankees pay for their own training staff, and they have to bring those guys along. They pay for it themselves. Major League Baseball doesn't give them money for that. Like, Major League Baseball gives them, here's your cut of the TV revenue. You pay out the people you need to make you better. And in that sense, if you're Timothy Johnson, I think it's fair to say, don't go, look, if you think your corner man's really that valuable that he'll make the difference between winning and losing, then put up your money. It's an investment in yourself. I mean, again, they are paying these guys peanuts for the most part, so I'm sympathetic on a real level there. But, like, you know, theoretically, yeah, pay your own shit. Let Dana enjoy his money. He's got a stressful job, you know? It's a tough job being Dana White.
Wow, I got to figure this out. Somebody must have given a shitload of money because it's 26 people in 21 hours donated $4,000. Somebody must have put in a couple grand. Wow, some guy named Rob Strauss put in $3,520.
Okay, this suddenly makes a lot more sense. I was trying to figure out how the fuck Timothy Johnson raised $4,000 on GoFundMe, and it turns out he really raised about $500, and then one crazy dude gave him the rest.
Yeah, totally. That's exactly what happened. Because I was just looking, because I'm weird and I need all the details on everything anytime I look anything up, but I was like, what the hell? How did 26 people do that? And then I'm like, oh, one guy donated 90% of it. So, yeah, essentially UFC pays for two tickets. And I know Joe Lozon wrote something good on this and how he did it all. Like, it was really well written and thought out and really cleared a lot of it up. And I remember at the time thinking that it seemed fair, and if Lozon was okay with it, I'd be okay with it. Yeah. But
he's a very reasonable dude.
Yeah, he seems cool, man. Like Joe
Lozon. If the dude whose son was born with cancer is okay with it. Although, in that case, maybe he's actually okay with everything now because he's just like, yeah, that really sucks. On the other hand, my kid's alive. So, it's like, oh, yeah, you only get two corner men? Your kid doesn't have cancer. So, let's just put these things in perspective a little bit. Plus, he's made a lot of money. He's probably been – I have a feeling Lozon's been taken very, well, good care. They've taken very good care of him over the years.
Yeah, he's got, I think, the most bonuses ever still. I think he still holds that record. But, yeah, they pay for two tickets, and he wanted a third, so it looks like he got the money. So there you go, Timothy Johnson. Your GoFundMe worked, apparently.
$4,000 for one ticket?
I don't know what it was for, but it's in Brazil. The fight's in Brazil. I'm guessing that's not all for the ticket. It's probably for hotel and whatever else, incidentals and paying for him to eat.
He can't double up. He's a coach. Sleep on the floor.
Bring an air mattress.
Hey, you fucking knocked that. I'm living a dream here, man.
Yeah, everyone is jealous.
Every fucking day I wake up and I just sprawl out. I go, it's amazing to be able to do this still.
You can do that in a normal bed.
Yeah, I know, but I slept in that fucking cot for so many years. I've really lowered what makes me happy in life. I think it's the way to go through life. To get to a real low minimal standard in your days. And then things like a queen size air mattress, you're going, ho, 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 I've hit it big time.
A couple fights announced recently at UFC 223. We've got Rose Namajunas versus Joanna Jędrzejczyk, number 2. It's obviously a rematch with Rose defending the strawweight title. It's in Brooklyn on April 7th.
Brooklyn.
What do you think of that fight?
Great fight. That's a lot of. I mean, that makes that card really good. I if I had a lot of money, I would go to that show. Because even though I hate New York, there's something. I feel like a grown up when I go there. I hate myself for saying that, but it's true. And yeah, two really good main events on that show. In the same vein of kind of what we just saw, where they're. Names, their personalities, and you feel like you're seeing people in their absolute prime who are the absolute best in their division. And now, like, unlike before when I wasn't really sure of Rose, now it's going to be like, oh yeah, here we go. This is the biggest fight in women's strawweight history. That's kind of cool.
Yeah. Did you see that Joanna apparently cut 15 pounds in 14 hours for that last fight?
Yeah, I did.
That doesn't sound good.
First of all, I've cut that much in a 24-hour period.
Right, but you're also a man and a weigher by 60 pounds.
I forgot about that size difference. Yeah, that is true.
Can you imagine being
I'm not a professional fighter either.
I know, but cutting from 129 to whatever, 115 in half a day, well, that's fucked up. That's a lot of weight. That's more than 10% of your body weight.
And I kind of wonder when they said that, how much she cut and why. I don't really doubt that she cut that. I'm more just kind of surprised by how apparently strong it was as far as negative consequences are concerned. That's a weird sentence there, Mike. I'm wondering if it's one of these things where she'd also been cutting, you know, 5 pounds the day before also, and you realize, okay, it's more than that. Because, I don't know, or maybe she is just a big fatty for her division. Maybe that's it. Maybe she's going to learn to lose a little bit of weight there. You too, honey. Hashtag you too.
It was funny. I saw her I saw pictures of her on the show I watch sometimes. There's this rapper who used to be a chef named Action Bronson, and he's got like a cooking show and whatever. She was on that show the day before. Like on the show, he's like smoking weed and drinking and cooking and doing all this shit. And they have like weird random chefs in, and it's a very bizarre show, but that's not the point. The point is like she was there and he was like trying to get her to eat stuff, and she brought like her own little tiny like plastic box of like veggies, and she's sitting there eating them while he's like drinking and eating all this stuff. It was like the most awkward like interaction I've ever seen, because he clearly didn't give a shit. And then like they sparred. It was pretty funny. But at the same time, I was thinking back to that, because like a couple days later, she had to make that huge cut. So she was already kind of dieting and being careful week of the fight, which I guess every fighter does, which isn't much of note. But looking back on that, her going on that show is interesting, because she did a lot of media. I think she was on like Kelly and not Regis, whatever it is, Ryan. She did the media rounds, and maybe that was part of the issue. I don't know, but she's been in the game a while. She shouldn't be that much overweight 14 hours out from a fight.
There's something doesn't make sense. I'm going to call her a liar. That's what I'm telling you. I'm calling her a liar.
Like that's a cover for the loss, you mean?
Yeah. She's just a big, fat, Polish liar.
We also have Jeremy Stephens versus Josh Emmett at UFC on Fox 28 in Orlando on February 24th. Right now, that's the main event for that show. And it's a month away. It's a Fox card headlined by Josh Emmett and Jeremy Stephens.
Look, they just did Jeremy Stephens and Doohoo Choi.
I understand, but that was FS1. This was some big Fox. Yeah. That's what I'm trying to explain to you.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Somebody really likes Jeremy Stephens, or Big Fox doesn't matter anymore because they know they're not going there for their renew. So it's still a very odd tactic. Yeah, it sucks to be a company with too many shows.
MMA history today. Can you tell me what happened 9 years ago today, January 24th?
9 years ago today. 9 years ago. 2007?
No.
2009?
Correct.
Let's do math first. That does change things a little, doesn't it, Mike? Shut up. All right, 2009, January 2009. Okay.
This did happen in America. I'll give you that.
Okay, January 2009. January 2008 was Brock and Nogueira. And then
Brock fought Nogueira? I missed that.
Sorry, it was the Brock and Mira Nogueira. And shut up, ass. Fuck with me here.
I would have loved it. That would have been a fun fight. I would have watched that shit.
Yeah, that would have been. Well, we did kind of see that with Bob Sapp, except for it was more awesome than it would have been Brock Lesnar, just because it was Bob Sapp. It's okay. A year after that, let's see, Brock would have beat Couture then, so that would have been after that. When was B? That's not BJ and Joe Stevens. I think that was 2006. January of 2009. Not Connor's debut. I think that was in August. No, it could have been in January. No, it wasn't. January 2010. What happened in 2010? That was a big year. Boy, oh boy. I just don't. Wait. 2009.
Want a hint?
Yeah, I'll take a hint.
It was in Anaheim, California.
I don't know.
It was not UFC. Affliction. Affliction had a show.
I was there at that show. Was that Theodore and Tim Sylvia?
No.
Oh.
It was Fedor and Andre Arlovsky.
Oh. I think I was at that one also. I don't know why I kept going to.
I like that you have no. You went to California for Affliction?
Yeah. I was credentialed for that.
You must have been swimming in attorney money back then.
I was in law school then. Yeah, I was just using student loans, and I slept in airports. You've gotten faint all of a sudden.
I hear you now.
Okay, everything's back to normal. Point being that, yeah, I went to that show. I got a credential for the very first Affliction. I was there. It was Tony and I were there. And Alexander Emelianenko walked by at one point. And we both were just like, oh, that's a real dangerous human being. Like, you can just feel the murder coming off of him. Yeah.
Yeah, he rapes people, too, I think.
Yeah, that's true. That's yet another thing that he has in common with Bill Cosby.
Yeah, and bad jokes. In the main event, Fedor defeated Andre Arlovsky. This show drew 13,000 people, did a $1.5 million gate, and 175,000 buys. So semi-successful. It was back when MMA was really hot, and people didn't really know about Fedor, and he was kind of this legendary guy. And 175,000 buys is what shitty Mighty Mouse pay-per-views do now. So I don't want to say it was a successful show because they overpaid pretty much all their fighters.
Is this Ben Rothwell 250? Oh, no, that was the first one.
That was the first one. But Arlovsky got $1.5 million for losing to Fedor. Like, you know, they just couldn't make up. The total payroll was disclosed as $3.3 million.
They were spending more money on guys than they needed to. Like, it's like, it's probably just some sort of money laundering thing. But if it wasn't, it's like they thought, if we'll just pay guys a lot, it's going to be like this publicity or something. I've never seen somebody just willingly pay way more than a guy is worth. Like, even like the fighters were like, what the fuck is with these numbers? I'm Ben Rothwell. I should be getting $12,000 on a can of beans, and these assholes are going to give me $250,000. What's going on?
I like that Gilbert Ivel fought on that show. He's good. Josh Barnett beat Ivel. Vitor beat Matt Lindland. Babalu defeated Sokaju. Dan Lozon, Joe Lozon's little brother, beat Bobby Green. Some names did fairly well, but I think
Bobby Green fights this Sunday.
Yeah, Affliction only, I think, ran three shows total and then lost a lot of money and it was over. Trump was involved. I don't know if he was at that show, but
I just realized I bet Donald Trump was involved in that first one, and he may have been there. I may have been in the same building for a cage fight as Donald Trump.
Possibly.
Me and the President of the United States could have just crossed paths. Like, honestly, goodness, at that time, if I had, like, talked to Donald Trump, would anybody have been really surprised? They'd have been like, yeah, of course he did. He's in Affliction.
It's funny because you were talking about Alexander Emelianenko, and I was just reading this. Gilbert Ivel was signed after Alexander Emelianenko was unable to be licensed in time. And then I don't know why he wasn't licensed. I can't figure that out. But apparently he was scheduled and couldn't fight for whatever reason.
That might have been when they discovered he had Hep C.
That's right. I forgot about that. It might have been.
A deadly bloodborne disease. Oops.
And thank God for the commissions.
Yeah, in that case. And now he's in prison. I don't know if he's still in prison. Probably.
Sometimes some government regulation's okay. Because you know how Affliction, the t-shirt company, would have let him fight.
On the other hand, if you're fighting for a t-shirt company, that's kind of on you. Like, seriously, like, if two dudes who sell t-shirts for a living say, hey, here's some money, I want you to get in a fight in a cage, if you don't really immediately think, hey, this may not be the safest thing in the world for me, you're probably a moron.
This weekend we've got Bellator 193.
Yeah, are you going to do that? I don't know. I got an offer to get in a fight with a bum. Oh, yeah? Who's going to pay you? Yeah, Joe from Foot Locker.
This weekend we've got Bellator 193. It's at the Pechanga Resort and Casino in Temecula, California. This is on Friday night, the 26th. In the main event, we have a catchweight fight at 180 pounds between Lorenz Larkin and Fernando Gonzalez.
I know one of those guys.
Probably Larkin.
Yeah, and only because he's like the mystery black guy that I'm always confused about.
He used to like fight at heavyweight and then got down to 170 and looked okay in the UFC at the end, then went to Bellator and lost in his first fight there.
Yeah.
Then we've got Saad Awad versus J.J. Ambrose. I don't know much about Double J. And the other name on this show, which I always find amusing for some reason, I'm like, Kendall Grove is fighting A.J. Matthews. I can't believe Kendall Grove's still around. Still fighting at middleweight.
I was going to say, he's still at middleweight? What the hell?
Yeah, he's still 6'9 and fighting at middleweight, yes.
Yeah, that's healthy.
He's a weird dude. He's Hawaiian.
By the way, what asshole decided that this Saturday's UFC needed to be a big Fox show? That's a waste.
Well, they load up these cards and then they've got nothing for these other shows. It's crazy. If you had to guess how old Kendall Grove is now, what would you guess?
Oh, he's probably like 32 or something.
35.
God, he's still fucking young as hell.
35. He debuted in the UFC in 06. Yeah. Then debuted professionally in 03. So
he fought what's his face? The ginger bastard there in the finals of the Ultimate Fighter. Hell of a
Ed Herman.
Yeah.
Yeah, he won. He was an Ultimate Fighter champion.
Season 3 was that? Were they 3?
I don't know but it was Ortiz and Shamrock.
Okay, it was season 3 then, yeah. They were the middleweights when Bisping was the light heavyweight.
Yeah, Bisping was good on that show even then. Remember he beat, like, Josh Haynes? Remember that guy? The guy, like, never did anything again, I felt like.
The meanie of MMA.
He wasn't that fat, was he?
He had blue hair and he was flabby looking.
Okay. So that's Bellator this weekend. Something to look forward to. In addition, on Saturday night, from the Spectrum Center in Charlotte, North Carolina, Flair Country, we've got UFC on Fox. This is number 27. We've got Jacare versus Derek Brunson, number 2, for everyone counting along at home.
Oh, yeah, I was definitely keeping track.
You know, this is a much-anticipated rematch.
Yeah, Jacare went out. I just watched the fight a little while ago. All, like, 30 seconds of Jacare just punched him in the face once, and that was pretty much it. Brunson's in that category of fighter that I don't know who he is. He falls with Lorenz Larkin, Robert Whittaker. There's just these dudes who are, I'm actually beginning to learn who they are because they were so anonymous for so long. I don't know. If he goes to the ground, he loses. If he stays on the feet, he still might lose. Jacare will probably pop for steroids. I feel like he's due. He's Brazilian. He got big wide shoulders and
he's getting older.
Yeah.
Brunson is the guy who lost that close decision to Anderson Silva, then protested it and still lost. But he's coming off two wins, one against old man Dan Kelly and Machida.
I'm surprised that by protesting the loss, they didn't give him another loss on his record.
So, I mean, Brunson's a good middleweight. He's a top 10 guy. And Jacare, I believe, is coming off a loss. Who did he lose to? Whittaker. So, yeah, he hasn't fought since April of last year. So he had a bit of a layoff. He hasn't fought for 9 months. And obviously, needs a win here because he's getting a little long in the tooth. And if he's ever going to get a title shot, now a big win here. Maybe Whitaker's out a while. Maybe Jacare would get the winner of Rockhold and Romero. But
why don't they just make this for an interim championship?
That's a good question.
I mean,
I'm not sure.
In the top 10 in the show doesn't have a title on the line. Seems like poor booking to me.
I would do it. In the semi-main event, we've got Dennis Bermudez versus Andre Touchy Feely. Bermudez is, I think, coming off a loss. Yeah, two straight losses. He lost to the Korean Zombie and Darren Elkins in his last two fights. And then I think Touchy Feely's coming off that win over Conor McGregor's buddy there, Artem Lobov. Yeah. Where Conor was yelling around the cage and called him a fag.
Well, I mean, shoe fits. Your name is Touchy Feely.
Okay, time out. If your name is Andre Feely, what other nickname would you go with?
I don't know, but I wouldn't go with the one that makes you sound like a pervert. In this day and age, you should be Andre hashtag me too Feely.
Yeah, appeal to all genders.
To the babe.net crowd.
Yes, very, very popular website. Reputable. Then we've also – you didn't give us predictions. Jacare and Brunson. Who you got?
Jacare. No. Okay. No.
Oh. Ooh.
I'm going to go with Brunson. I'm going to say Brunson on the theory of old Brazilian versus Mike underestimating somebody.
Okay, and Bermudez versus Touchy.
Bermudez.
Okay, then we've got.
Remember when Bermudez and Matt Grace years ago had this amazing world class fight? That was
then
awesome.
Then didn't Grace something happen to his head or something like?
He got like in this mega accident or something.
Yeah, like I feel like he had
before?
A hole in his head. No,
he's been in a lot of accidents.
I don't think he ever fought again.
No, he's done now. He's like a cop in Oklahoma. And this is a poor bastard that when he was a teenager was one of the top like five amateur wrestlers on the planet, essentially. And he got in a horrible car accident, I think, like before he started college. And so he never really got to live up to his potential. And then he got like in another fucked up accident or something as a professional cage fighter. God is... got it out for Matt Grice, or he's working in mysterious ways and protecting him from the dangers of competition.
Could be. Yeah, his last fight was against Bermudez. It was fight of the night at UFC 157, and he is a police officer now.
He's
going to
totally kill a black guy. he's a good old boy, like Oklahoma. He's got a lot of, I could have been a contender. My life isn't what it should have been. I'm angry. That guy moved. I can tell everybody I saw a gun. And he's going to blast away and take out his feelings and aggression. And he's going to wear his red Trump hat to court.
That is quite a positive prediction. He did. He was in a bad traffic accident in Oklahoma in 2013. And suffered traumatic brain injury. I don't have other details right here, but I remember like a picture of him and there was like a dent in his head. Like it was.
He should come back and fight Matt Hughes. And then Frank Mir can be the referee.
No, he should announce. Who could the referee be? I'm sure there's a ref that had some bad accident.
Well, I mean, you could say every time
Mazzagatti probably
Mazzagatti ever
damage.
Did refereeing was an accident. Yeah.
Rounding out the main card on Fox, we have Jordan Rinaldi versus Gregor Gillespie and Drew Ben Dober versus Frank Camacho.
There's some decent stuff. Like when I say decent, like guys on the undercard. It's one of those shows like the Virginia, not as good as Virginia. Was on paper where they put together a card. You go, oh wow, actually that's a pretty good card, all things considered, for a city that cares for trannies poop.
And there's going to be a lot of wooing at this show. I can almost guarantee that. But yeah, Bobby Green versus Eric Koch is good. Mirsad Bektik is back. He's a, you know, he's got a lot of hype behind him, even though he lost to Darren Elkins. He should have won that fight against Elkins. He was beating the crap out of him. And then Elkins came back. This will be his first fight since that Elkins fight. So he's
beating the crap out of him, and then Elkins came back, you say? Never heard of such a thing.
What? He's fighting Godofredo Pepe. And then that's pretty much it. Justine Kish is back. She shit herself in her last fight. We'll see if we get a repeat of it. Maybe she pisses herself. She'll change it up this time.
You know who else also shits themselves? Matt Grice.
I don't see that on Wikipedia, but I'll take your word for it.
Traumatic brain injuries, man. He wears a diaper.
Yeah, well, he's a policeman now. You think he'd probably have his bowels under control before you give someone a gun and let him run around the city.
It's Oklahoma. If there was a cop that shit himself a lot and wore a diaper, would you really be surprised if they gave him a gun?
Oklahoma is the home of Thackerville.
That's right. And a casino there.
One of the greatest cities in America.
It's also the home to sadness.
What else is going on? That's all I've got for MMA. I think that covers it. In regards to other news, we had a big Monday Night Raw this past Monday night in the world of pro wrestling. It was the 25th anniversary show. That thing has been going a long time and has been successful and made Vince McMahon a billionaire. So obviously they're doing something right. Did you happen to catch the 25th anniversary of Raw?
I did. I watched the whole thing. I basically live tweeted with it. I turned off the boring things that sucked.
What were the boring things that sucked?
I don't know. There was a bunch of fucking women wrestling. I was like, I don't care. Like, pretty much any of the actual wrestling I wasn't watching.
Right.
Because, just whatever. I watched it. It was weird.
I started watching it, and I fell asleep because I don't really care, and I'm old. But the opening segment with Vince and Austin and Shane, you know, it was classic. But when I was watching it, like, you remember, like, the Attitude Era, and you remember it fondly as, like, the greatest time in wrestling, the Monday Night Wars, all that stuff. And I was watching it, I'm like, this is so dumb. Why does he dump these beers, like, all over himself? Like, he doesn't even drink them. At the time, I was probably, like, 20. How old would I have been? 98, 99. Yeah, like, 20-ish, like, just starting drinking in college or whatever. And, like, at the time, I thought it was cool, but, like, looking at it now, I'm like, such a waste of beer, like, and then he's going to have all this beer all over him and stink and have to take a shower and his shirt's ruined. I'm like, ah, oh, what a pain in the ass that is, and a waste of beer.
I loved it just because when it was – during that era, I was a dickhead teenager. It's like, right. Obviously, Steve, you know, is supposed to be a dickhead adult. Obviously, Austin was, you know, cool and everything, and I liked him, but I was more like the – oh, I like ECW and the Hardy Boys, like, or, you know, like, I'm going to be the hardcore fan. So, like, I didn't really appreciate Steve Austin as much as I should have.
Okay.
Because, like, now when I watch back, I'm just going, I would watch Raw every week if I just knew that every week Steve Austin was going to come out and just ruin Vince's night. Right. It's just so much fun. And I realize it's just that dynamic, the way these two play off each other, it is such a genuinely great storyline. I've always really believed that Vince McMahon should have gotten Emmy, or at least nominated, because he was so tremendous in the role, and Austin is just perfect, and the way they set it up, it's like Austin's like he's like Bugs Bunny that drinks. Like, you just know what he's going to do, and everyone knows it, and he still hits a stunner, and we still all laugh and love it, and it's so great, and I just had so much fun watching it, and then, you know, Roman Reigns came out or something, I was just like, eh, whatever.
Yeah, I liked it too. I like you. I laughed a lot, and the video they showed prior to it, I really liked a lot too. Because like I can remember Primetime Wrestling. Like I remember watching that as a kid, and then when it switched over to Raw, I can remember the first. I shouldn't say I can really remember the first Raw. But I've probably seen it since. But, like, I would watch that stuff every Monday night.
Oh, I loved the Manhattan. One of my very early, not very earliest, but an early memory of mine. I very clearly remember the 1-2-3 Kid beating Razor Ramon.
Me too.
And
yep.
I was the biggest 1-2-3 Kid fan in the world. I loved him. Like, this little guy is athletic, and like, he was the first time I ever really saw somebody doing these things, and they played this underdog thing, and I was just like always mad, like, why isn't the 1-2-3 Kid get more of a push? Why isn't he a bigger star? Like decades later, my dad would still make fun of me, like, yeah, but the 1-2-3 Kid, ha, ha, ha.
Did you ever see GWF? It was on ESPN, like, weekdays after
Global
school.
Wrestling?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember briefly, like, I was in that era, I watched everything.
Oh, me too.
I think I have a problem when it comes to interests of mine where I just go really crazy into them.
I'm similar.
Yeah. But I mean, I've watched so much shit back then, and I wasted a lot of my time because I didn't appreciate things like I do now. Like, I just watched random La Parca shit the other day, and I'm watching going, why didn't I realize La Parca was awesome? This is the most entertaining dude. But back then, I was like, no, I want to see Rey Mysterio and Juventud Guerrero do some flips. It's like, oh, you dumbass. This man's playing a chair like a guitar. That's awesome.
I can remember I would tape, like, WWF and WCW pay-per-views. There's this guy out in Illinois, like, I think it was Godfrey, Illinois, and we would trade tapes because I couldn't get, like, New Japan or any of that crap. So I would tell them matches I wanted to see. I would look in Observer, find the star ratings, and be like, I want this match, this match, this match. And he would be like, all right, I want Vader versus Sting. And there wasn't a lot of stuff he wanted for me because, like, the work rate wasn't even similar, but he would send me, like, ECW tapes, every weekly ECW show. It was the weirdest thing because, like, my mom would drive me to the post office. I'm trading tapes with some probably pedophile out in fucking Illinois. No offense to people in Illinois. But it was so weird at the time because you would have to, like, literally go to the post office, get the package, put this tape in, mail it. Probably looked like the sketchiest shit some 14-year-old kid mailing out tapes across the country, but
that's bad when people, like, mailed porn and, like you would, like, get porn, like, in like, brown bags, and there was, like, controversies back in, like, the 80s, like, is it legal and permissible to ship pornography across state lines? And yeah. Then nowadays, it's just like, I see trannies butt fucking each other in my ads for home mortgages or something.
You've got that's based on your search history.
That's a reverse mortgage, actually, but yeah.
I've got an ad for Philly avocado nachos on my thing right now. Anyway,
yeah, me too.
Happy anniversary to Monday Night Raw. Were there any other highlights on the show? They brought out a lot of old guys. They had Mean Gene. They had the one thing I read and I saw and I thought was hilarious was they basically did like a simulcast. They were at Barclays Center for the main part of the show, but they also rented out the Manhattan Center, which is where they originally taped the show every week. And basically at the Manhattan Center, they had JR and Jerry Lawler as the commentators. But they had, like, no matches. Like, a couple guys came out, did interviews. But the people who bought these tickets for the Manhattan Center saw, like, no matches. They sat there and they watched what was going on at the Barclays Center on the screen. And, like, they were pissed, I guess, because they got no matches and just a couple interviews.
Yeah, that's pretty shitty. I know I saw some people on Twitter kind of laughing, like, oh, the smart marks all got trolled, ha, ha, ha. But I'm like, I tuned in because I wanted to see shit in the Manhattan Center. Whenever they went to the Barclays, I was like, oh, we're back here. It's just regular shit. Like,
right.
It shows tremendous insecurity on the part of Vince McMahon. I know, shocker, but anybody else would be like, let's embrace our history. We're going to do the whole show from here. It'd be a really cool event. Like, nobody had a problem. You just know Vince is like, oh, no, I'm not going to look like I'm big time. Like, I'm in New York. I got to do something big. Like, I can only think of one other person that's kind of got that similar mindset in his life. And it worked out for him. But
it's working out for Vince, too.
Yeah, that's true. He's off the gas, it looked like.
Oh, my God. His face. Like, I think he got a bad facelift or something. I hate when people do that, man. Just get old. Like, it never looks better. Like, you look like you're super vain, and you end up looking worse. Just get old. Like, Clint Eastwood. Like, I'm not a Clint Eastwood fan, obviously, but it's like he just got old and he looks old and it's fine. People get old. Like, you can deal with it. Like, when you get the facelift, it's like you look worse and you look like a vain, egotistical dickhead, I think. But
well, maybe the shoe fits. Let's be honest here.
Maybe.
Watching Raw, and I mean, I don't know when I stopped watching Raw. Like, just kind of gave up, but it's been probably a decade, more than a decade since I gave a shit in any way. But I remember watching it, and as they're kind of going through stuff, it did occur to me, like, wow, this is 25 years. That's a long fucking time. And you think of, like, the Monday Night Wars. It's like, that was realistically, like, what, 3 or 4 years of the whole deal? Like, in the grand scheme of things, that really isn't that big of – I mean, it is if you're a wrestling fan, because that was essentially the last time there was wrestling. After that, like, Vince won. Everything in the world is Vince. Even now, it's like, oh, they have NXT, so they got the work rate promotion. Like, he owns it all. And it's like, yeah, actually, John Cena has been around longer than Steve Austin ever was.
Way longer.
Like, I think of, like, this era as being kind of boring and not as fun, but realistically, it's a much more prominent era, and yet they did the right thing for me, at least, and, you know, did clips from the golden age there, the Attitude Era. Although I thought it was so sad at the end when they had DX all out there, and then they were trying to, like, have the Balor Club, and, like, oh, we're just as cool as them. And it was just like, you guys are sad old men. And Triple H is so pathetic. Because the whole reason that, like, guys like him got over is because they were sticking it to the old generation. And now your storyline is, hey, Balor, you know, Balor's, we're cool, and Balor thinks we're cool also. It's like, he shouldn't think you're cool. You didn't think that the Horsemen were cool. You're like, oh, no, Hogan's boring and stupid. We're different and better, and it's like, however, they did have Brock and Braun and Kane all hate each other a lot, and that's awesome. I realize how much I really, really like to watch just massive human beings beat on each other, even if it's fake. It's still kind of fun to see a big 7-foot-tall dude just slam Brock through a table after he threw Brock over the top rope, and I just saw how Brock still flopped around and moved. I'm just like, holy shit, this man is a freak of an athlete. You're not going to see Stipe Miocic get thrown over a top rope and tumble around kind of gracefully like that.
I guess it did really well in the ratings. Like, somebody was telling me, I think a buddy texted me or something, they did like 4.5 million viewers, which is huge, because usually I think they're under 3, so the ratings were way up.
I have no idea at all. Zero about clue what the ratings are for W. They could be doing 2s or 4s. I'd be like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't even know if they really talk about what the actual rating is. Usually it's just the number of people who watched it, but let me see if I can find it. I don't see it here. I saw it somewhere. Anyway, it seemed like it was a success, but I don't know. I don't think it's going to lead to a rebirth. I think it's a one-night show, and it'll go back to normal after this. We still got the NFL playoffs going on. We know who's going to be in the Super Bowl this year.
And Enzo Amore raped a girl.
Oh, yeah. We didn't talk about that. Reportedly. Allegedly.
He's been fired. And he raped
Did you see the video she put out?
I did. I saw it a little bit. I couldn't listen to it. All I know is that when I looked at her, my very first thought was, holy shit, she looks like she's 12 years old. She looked really young. And maybe she's just like 18 or 19 or something like that. But he looks like an older dude, or looks like my age maybe. But I'm just like, oh, this is really weird. Like, I don't know what he did, but he looks kind of scummy. And then I saw this awesome promo that somebody tweeted of The Miz.
I saw that too,
burying him. I was like, and now, like, you're like, in hindsight, you'd watch it go, oh, yeah, no. The way Enzo was reacting there, that wasn't like the, it was the, oh, wait, what the fuck's going on? Like, I got to just stand here and take this. I'm getting massacred here. And then I thought to myself, oh, yeah, we live in an era where The Miz somehow made it as a giant star in pro wrestling.
he can cut a decent promo.
He's very competent, but still, yeah. I remember him on the Real World. Real World season 10 in New York, and he ran around pretending to be Hogan and The Rock, and everybody kind of laughed at him. He's not going to be a pro wrestler. And back then, I was dumb enough to think, well, you know, he's not going to be a pro wrestler. Like, you got to really dedicate yourself, and this guy's such a pansy, wimpy type. He'll never make it. And sure enough, here he is, kind of one of the elder statesmen in the fucking company, and he's banging Maryse. He made it happen. The Miz, maybe he's got to be a Scientologist or something, because it worked out for him. He got everything you could want. He took the shortcut to success. He went on reality TV and parlayed that into marrying one of the most beautiful men in the world as the main event's WrestleMania. What the hell?
Yeah, I mean, I can remember him. I saw him, the WWE used to do shows in Hyannis, which is, like, basically center of the Cape. Hyannis Sports, where the Kennedys live. Yeah, this is, like, literally 2 miles from there. But we've got, like, this tent thing. Like, it's an outdoor, it's a summer venue, and it's called the Melody Tent. And they ran shows there from, like, 92 to like 97, when then it got popular and they stopped running there because they could run bigger arenas. It only seats like 1,200 people. It's not huge, but
I remember those tent shows. I think you've told me about those.
Yeah, it's a weird thing. And then they stopped doing it. Then when they were less popular, they came back. They haven't run the last couple of years. I don't know if it's based on the rent or what it is. But like Tony Bennett comes and plays. Like Louis C.K. has done shows there. Like it's comedians like the Beach Boys. Like. People who are older and on vacation would want to go see Bill Maher's.
Like everybody, you just including Bill Maher now. Yeah. Like you're 4 for 4 as far as if you told me these people were accused of sexual assault. I'd be like, yep, I believe it.
The Beach Boys have all been all of the boys have been accused.
At least one of them has. I'm sure, and maybe killed a girl on accident, like in a drug thing. Tony Bennett for sure. Oh, he definitely raped chicks. He for sure got liquored up. Come on, baby, give it to me. And like she just kind of shut down and went real quiet. Like, that's the way I like it.
You know who else plays there every summer? Huey Lewis in the News. I've had multiple people ask me, do you want to go see Huey Lewis? I'm like, no. I'd rather work or just go to bed. I would prefer either of those.
My parents saw Neil Diamond years ago, and I regret not seeing it. I could have gone. Neil Diamond's awesome, and now he's going to die because he's got Parkinson's.
Yeah, he still wants to make music, though. Just he's not going to tour live anymore. Anyway, my point of the story was I saw one of Miz's first matches. I'm like, this guy blows. Like, it was bad. Like, just missed time and spots and everything. And I just remember, I'm like, this guy is not going to make it. It was probably, like, right after he was out of Ohio Valley and he was just learning, but he sucked. And now he's fine. He's competent. I mean, WWF doesn't really – I still say F. WWE doesn't have a lot of guys who are, like, terrible workers. They just don't. They're all competent, I feel like.
That's it. He's a perfect WWE-style wrestler, which is good, competent, but never going to light the world on fire. Probably not going to get the chance to dedicate matches to Chris Benoit or anything like that.
Anyway, this past weekend, the Patriots defeated the Jags 24-20, and the Eagles smashed the Vikings 38-7. So we've got a Super Bowl rematch here of the Eagles versus the Patriots.
Yeah, the Eagles fans don't deserve happiness because I remember they kept shitting on Donovan McNabb, and he went like 4 straight NFC Championship games. I'm like, what is wrong with you people? This is a great quarterback who's doing a fantastic job. He's really, really proven himself, and they just couldn't wait to get rid of him. They didn't like him from day one, and I think some of it's just because he's black. This is a racist fucking town. We have probably the two most racist sports towns in America, by reputation at least. It's just insane. I mean, the fucking Eagles fans, it's so bad they greased up the poles with Crisco.
I saw that.
When you know in advance that people are going to be climbing poles, and they're all white, which is great. It's great to see white people doing this shit for once. I love seeing my people just act like the animals that we are. And they still manage to climb the pole, even with all the Crisco. And I saw some video of some guy. He was just like sleeping on top of a car, and he was driving by, and like as they pan, there's some dude shirtless flexing. He's wearing a gigantic eagle head. It was like madness. And meanwhile, you got like the Patriots fans who are borderline just showing up in three-piece suits and drinking like Michelob Ultra or something like that. Like
it's nothing like that. But go ahead.
They're like classy yuppie. Like they're the douchebags that grew up. I remember when I watched seeing them on the field, and some of it's because they all are white for the most part. But I think it was maybe Edelman or somebody was out. I don't know if it's Edelman. Maybe it's just Gronk, but the uniforms were so crisp and clean, and they all were like, they all had muscles, and their shirts were all just lined up, and everybody looked like they were just this machine. They're coming from behind in the fourth quarter, and they just seemed so calm and collected. Nobody was panicking. Brady was like, he was just giving orders. He wasn't yelling or anything like that. And when they scored, like this, they got all these yards on fucking fluke it dumb. Holding calls or pass interference. It's the stupidest ways only the Patriots used to advance anywhere in the Super Bowl, and it still happened, and you knew it would happen, and they just went down there. They looked like the way Darth Vader's football team would look and operate, and it was cold and clinical, and when it was over, Bill Belichick being handed the trophy as AFC champion, and he just grabbed it and nonchalantly just almost tossed it to whoever was next to him. It's like, I clearly have no need for this useless trinket. Get this out of my face. I'm wearing a hoodie.
I try and be not biased to the Patriots, and I think for like most people in this area, they think I'm a jerk because I've got the gimmick rant where I tell everybody that Tom Brady's on steroids, and people get like totally offended and pissed off at me, and they're like, are you crazy? Look at him. I'm like, he's 40 years old and he's still better than every quarterback in the league, and these are the highest paid athletes in the world and the most competition in the world for this job. There's no way he should be as good as the best 30 year old in the league. It's ridiculous. So people get mad at me for that, but I truly believe that, so I say it. But I gotta give the guy credit. Like, he had 11 stitches in his hand from Wednesday and goes on that drive at the end of the game to win the game again without Edelman. Gronk got knocked out like in the first or second quarter with some head injury.
Oh, that was
without his two best receivers. If I throw in to like no name guys that nobody outside of New England's ever heard of, it's like, how the hell do they do this? And they did it. I mean, the Jags aren't the best team in the world. The AFC's, it's a down year in the NFL, I think. Very good defense. It's the second best defense in the league. And like, I never had a doubt they were going to win the game and come back, and they did it with like 10 minutes left. They're down by 10 points, and they do it all the time. And this is Tom Brady's 8th Super Bowl. Like, nobody can touch that. It's just crazy because, like, you think Tom Brady, you don't think the most athletic guy. He's not known for the long ball. Just somehow, like, I don't know if it's the Patriots or it's these other teams aren't very good or if the other teams just choke. And you got to be able to beat the Patriots for all 60 minutes. And I'm not saying that as like a diehard like New England Patriots fan, but if you let up for 5 minutes at the end of the game, you're going to lose because they're just going to keep going, and they've been there and they know how to do it. And I just feel like this Eagles team that they're good, but they've got Foles, their backup in there. And it's like, I don't think they're going to be in the game for 60 minutes like the Patriots will.
No, it's and I acknowledging recency bias, same way with like Stipe calling him the greatest ever. It's possible that this might be the greatest sports franchise I've witnessed in my lifetime. I grew up with the Bulls here in Chicago, and obviously I'm biased on that regard, but they are clearly the standard for all time for me for a long time there.
Mm-hmm.
But and the Yankees had their run, but this is insane. Over essentially almost 18 years, they've basically been the de facto best team in the league. Every other team has been measured up against them. Tom Brady's gone to Super Bowls like 40% of the time he's played.
50. It's 50%. Yeah.
That's ridiculous. In a sport that is infamous for parity. There's been you can look at how many teams that they've played. They're back to the Eagles. The Eagles, since the Patriots started winning Super Bowls, the Eagles have gone from nothing, built themselves up to a multiple-time NFC champion, went to the Super Bowl themselves, lost, did a complete rebuild, and are now back. And meanwhile, the Patriots won like four Super Bowls in the meantime.
Almost two or three rebuilds for the Eagles. They had that Chip Kelly run. They brought the dog killer back. Michael Vick was playing for him for a while.
I know the Bears. I think the Bears and Colts was 05. I don't know if it was 05, but
it was probably 05 because Patriots won at 01, 03, 04.
Yeah, so it might have been 05. And that was the Bears at the beginning of like the Rex Grossman era. And that was like Rex's like second year when people were like, hey, this guy could be our future quarterback. And we got to the Super Bowl after we rode Kyle Orton for a while. But like we had the Rex Grossman era. Then we went from him to the Jay Cutler era. And now we're on the Mitch Trubisky era. Meanwhile, the Patriots are still like, Tom Brady's still the best in the whole world. Are you guys having your third, fourth, fifth quarterback there? Yeah. What are you going to do? I'm in awe of that triumphant of Kraft, Brady, and Belichick. And like you say, almost they go from no names. They take malcontents. They have like essentially Tom Brady's been a big star for them. After that, maybe Gronk. Otherwise, they just bring in Randy Moss for a year or two, get what they need to, they get rid of him. They bring in this guy, he has a couple good years, they get rid of him. I've never seen a team just turn over talent like that, except for the quarterback, which is why teams give up everything, I guess, for a quarterback.
Yeah, it's interesting, too, because after I think it was after that third Super Bowl in 04 where they beat the Eagles, it might have been the Panthers. I get them mixed up. But either way, both their defensive coordinators, both their coordinators left that season. It looks like the same thing is going to happen this year. Like, it's completely, like, history rewriting itself because Matt Patricia, I think, is going to the Lions. And what's his name? Josh McDaniels is going somewhere, too. I think Indy, maybe.
I think McDaniels has been a coordinator for Belichick, left, become a head coach, failed, come back, been a coordinator, now he's going back to being the head coach again.
Right, all in the time that Belichick and Brady have been there. Yeah, it's insane. Back in the day, it was Charlie Weiss and Dante's. Yeah, he went to Notre Dame. And who's the other guy? Romeo Crennel. He went. I think he was like the Browns head coach. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. It's crazy that just even all their backups got starting jobs all over the league. Like, I don't know how they do it.
They've had several quarterbacks as backups for Tom Brady that have gone on to be very good quarterbacks.
Yeah, I mean, they
just insane. And, you know, I completely forgot what my point was. But it was a very good point. And
I bet.
If I keep talking, it'll come back to me, much like those memories it turns out that I have been repressing.
One of my favorite things after the game, Belichick is like at a post fight press conference, but a post game press conference, and he's wearing like this big baggy like cut off like sweatshirt, but he like cut the sleeves off of it, so it's like a short sleeve sweatshirt with like all these like strings and shit dangling off him. And like one of the reporters, like Belichick is known for like these short, terse answers and wants to get the hell out of there and hates the press. And somebody asked him like, oh, what'd you make of Brady like gutting through his hand injury and stitches and everything? And he's like pauses. He goes,
yes.
We all know Tom is a really tough guy, but we're not talking about open heart surgery here, okay? And you're like, what the fuck? On his throwing hand. This is the guy who, like, supposedly was deflating balls and needs everything perfect and is a fucking psycho perfectionist with 11 stitches on his throwing hand, like, below his thumb, like, in the meat of your hand. I don't know why he even needed the stitches. Like, that's the other thing. Like, half of this shit's a mystery and they're so secretive. They've got Brady coming out with gloves to the pregame conference and, like, part of them, like, fucks with the media, too, which I love, too.
Brady was walking into the stadium, and they were showing him walk in, and he kept his right hand in his pocket the whole time. And then they start interspicing and go, look at this. Every other time he comes into the stadium, he's using his right hand to carry a bag. And sure enough, they like one shot after another, I'm like, oh, they did this. They planned this. This is also a weird psychological thing. And that's why Belichick works, is because he does look at people and goes, look, I know he's tough and all, but it's not open heart surgery. Like, he is so grounded. He recognizes all this media bullshit, and he's just like, look, he cut his hand, but he still able to throw the football. This is, you know, let's take it easy here. And I think that's why they've been so successful. The man is in touch with reality like very few people are. Except for he's a huge Trump supporter. I'm not really sure how that all works. Also, he's got to be wearing these fucking hoodies for show. Like, dude, you got enough money. If you're not going to spend it, give it to me.
I don't think he cares. I just don't think he gives a shit about, like, whether it's the media, what fans think, what the players think. He's just going to do what he's going to do and doesn't care. And I think that's part of the success. Like, it's like, kind of like the Popovich deal, where he just doesn't give a shit. You ask him something, he'll tell you what. If you ask him about Trump, he's going to say, you know, Trump's a scumbag piece of shit and travesty for America. Like, he just doesn't care. Like, and, you know, half of the Spurs fans are probably Trump supporters, and it's like, he doesn't give a shit because he wins and he does his job and that's it. And there's something, I don't know if I want to say honorable about it, but something you got to respect there.
They're intelligent. You know, they look at the, was it last week I was saying this? I don't know. I'm sure it was. I don't know who else I would have talked to, but it wouldn't actually matter because nobody would have heard it. This idea that I look at Belichick and I think, this guy just thinks I'm so much smarter and better than this, but this is what I'm going to do with my life. This is what I'm going to focus on. I'm going to do this, but I'm very aware that I'm coaching a game. Like, let's just calm down here. Like, it's everything he just says right there. It's like, it's not open heart surgery. And he's right. Like, this is, especially in the world of football. Brady, you know, your throwing hand matters and all that stuff, but come on. How many times do you see guys in football play like, oh, yeah, he got part of his thumb ripped off in the middle of the scrum, and he just went back out there after he taped it up? But, like, that stuff happens all the time in football. So Brady's thing is kind of like, come on, guys. Like, we're athletes. Like, half these guys cannot feel their fingers, and we keep them drugged up that way because we don't want them to realize that they're missing their pinky. Like, this is the nature of the game.
You are a baseball fan, so you can probably shed some light on this. Chipper Jones, Vladimir Guerrero, Jim Tomei, and Trevor Hoffman were all elected to the Baseball Hall of Fame today.
And Edgar Martinez was not, which is I've been hearing that in my ear all afternoon from Fatso, which is valid. Edgar got fucked. He should be in the Hall of Fame for sure. I don't have a problem with any of those. Trevor Hoffman... closers are such a weird one. I'm not really sure I'd quantify them outside of Mariano Rivera. Every other closer is just kind of this weird category of veiled pitcher who can do something really well for three out. But the rest of me, I mean, Jim Tomey's a Hall of Famer. Vladimir Guerrero, Hall of Famer. Really fun guy to watch. Chipper Jones is best third baseman of his generation. But there's another 10 guys on that ballot that could easily be in the Hall of Fame.
What's the deal with Martinez? He doesn't make it because he was a DH, basically?
That's it.
Yeah. Okay.
Which is hilarious. Like, Jim Tomei, one of the worst fielders ever, he spent most of his career, if he wasn't in the field shitting it up at first base, was a DH. Oh, it's okay for him to get in the strength of his bat, but suddenly with Edgar, it's like, wow, he didn't really hit a lot. Well, they literally named the award for best designated hitter after him. It's like, Cy Young's in the Hall of Fame. It's because they have this Cy Young Award. You tend not to get awards named after you unless you're good at something.
Well, yeah, I mean, you think David Ortiz will make it, too. You know what I mean? Like, how does he not make it? And he was a DH, you know?
He'll have the advantage over Edgar in that major market and part of these magic moments.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It wasn't as good as Edgar.
No?
Not overall. He had a couple of amazing peak years, and he finished well at the end. But I think as a hitter, Edgar was better. Dave Ortiz had more power, but for the art of hitting, the only guy since has been Joey Votto, as far as just really knew how to hit the baseball, just maximized everything.
Two players who did not make it were Roger Clemens, who got 57.3% of the vote, and Barry Bonds, who got 56.4%. Obviously, they've got that steroid taint on them still. Will they ever make it?
Probably someday, somehow. Yeah. It just seems like eventually this will work its way out. I want to know what who the asshole is, though, that apparently voted for Clemens but not for Bonds. Like, like really? They should have the identical percentages. Because if you don't think that the steroids matter, they're maybe 1 and 1A in the Hall of Fame if you started from scratch, let alone 10 best. And yet somebody's like, well, I think Roger Clemens is pretty good, but Barry Bonds, a little overrated. Not going to put him in.
Do you think they both should be in?
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't care about the steroid thing?
I do for guys that I think made them great. Like, these two guys were great no matter what. And even if they were on steroids their whole career, they were so much better than everybody forever. It's kind of like John Jones doing stuff. It's like, yeah, maybe, but it evens out in the fact that he's a god. Whereas somebody like Sammy Sosa was not very good at baseball until he started taking steroids. You just clearly see, like, suck, 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 suck. Oh, he got really big. Oh, a lot of home runs. And then it dropped down when they started testing for it. It's like, no, that guy's not a Hall of Famer. He cheated his win. Barry Bonds won three MVPs before he probably even heard of steroids. Although, I'm a little suspect on some of that. I hear a lot of the sports writers, and they'll be like, well, you know, steroids didn't come to the late 90s and all this and that. I'm like, dude, I was a kid in the 80s and I knew that steroids existed. They all go to the same gym. It's not like there's a baseball gym and a football gym. It's like, guys were using steroids in the 70s in football. Everybody saw Hulk Hogan on TV. I'm sure that somebody in the mid 80s could have been playing baseball being like, hey, I wonder what that guy's doing to be so big. We should look into that.
Another one I was seeing on the list here is Manny Ramirez. He only got 22% of the vote, and he got busted a couple times for steroids, too. Like, he would get in if he didn't have that taint as well, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, honestly, I was wrong before when I said that Edgar was the best hitter. I think Manny Ramirez was just freaking sick. I mean, he was incredible. Fucking lunkhead in the field. But it did some really, really weird things, which hurts him, which is a shame. It shows that this whole process is basically governed by a bunch of fucking morons, because obviously Bonds gets less than Clemens because Bonds is black and that's it. I don't know. They're both surly dickheads. And meanwhile, Manny did everything. It's like the best hitter in Boston since Ted Williams. And nobody even thinks about him. It's like, oh yeah, is it 22%? And I'm even guilty about it. I'm like, well, I don't know, Manny failed. But it's like, no, this dude's a fucking legend. And he won a World Series. That's pretty good.
Yeah, I'm with you. Okay, so that's our Baseball Hall of Fame update. In other news, there's a guy in Maine. Well, there's probably a couple million guys in Maine. What about the population on
Maine? I bet there's not a couple million guys in Maine.
You don't think?
I bet there's no way Maine has a million people.
Fuck.
No way. South Dakota has like 500,000.
Yeah, but that's landlocked flyover state.
Yeah, but Maine's got a lot of bears and trees.
I like when I do, like, callbacks earlier in a show that no one's listening to. Let's see. State of Maine, population.
700,000.
Hang on. Total, what, 1.3 million.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
That's a lot of people having sex with seals.
I don't think you can reproduce that way.
I don't even think there's seals up there.
There, Bar Harbor. Yeah, there are. There's okay. Seals in Maine. Absolutely. How dare you? Huh. No. Mount Katahdin is the highest point in Maine.
It's awesome.
Maine is the 42nd ranked most populous state in the country. God. Wow, I thought Maine was bigger. It's only the 39th largest by, like, area.
It feels like it's very isolated.
Oh, yeah, Northern Maine, there's fucking no one. Like, it is desolate. It's all woods and mountains and shit. Nobody lives up there.
I want to go there. That sounds awesome.
Coastal, though. Like, the coastal stuff. There's, like, Portland, first bush vacation up there, like Kenny Bunkport.
Based
on Battle on the Coast.
Oh, I love Maine. I could be on ocean, but still have weather, and there's lighthouses everywhere. That's a big, big positive. Mm. Yeah, Maine's kind of a dream of mine. I'm not going to lie.
I know, you've mentioned that before. Anyway, you'll like this guy from Maine. He was the town manager of a town called Jackman. Apparently, he made some posts on his social media expressing pro-white views and promoting racial segregation. So town officials have fired him. His name is Tom Kaczynski, and he moved to Maine. This town has less than 900 people from Arizona a year ago, and he's basically the top administrator in the town, whatever that means. He launched a website called New Albion, aimed at defending the people and culture of New England. He commented to the Bangor Daily News that he is pro-white without being anti-other groups in terms of their racial identity. Kaczynski told the news organization, Islam is fundamentally incompatible with Western civilization, and he does not believe that his views are racist. For me, this is always a hang-up. Being anti-Muslim isn't necessarily racist. It's anti-religion. I mean, any race could be Muslim, but whatever.
It's a fucking European influence. All those assholes in Britain call everything racism.
Yeah, it's not. Muslim isn't a race. I hate that shit. Not Muslims. You know what I'm saying. Anyway, he was unanimously voted off the board, and it's in the best interest of the town to get him out, they said. What I found interesting about this story was not only was this guy racist and the board hired him and didn't bother checking his social media, they gave him a $30,000 severance package for agreeing not to sue the town. As a town manager, he was only paid $49,000 annually. So he basically got, you know, three-quarters of a year of pay for putting some shit on Facebook, which I think is something that I'm going to consider doing.
A town of 900 paid a mayor $50,000 a year?
He's not called mayor, he's called town manager.
Like, it's 900 people. It's not even a high school.
Yeah.
It's that you could literally just run the place by rumor. It's whatever. I mean, he's dumb, is what he is. He's just stupid.
He's going to continue pushing for hashtag white civil rights, he says.
Well, that's good. I mean, you don't want to – you got to stand up for what you believe. You don't want to just give in at the first sign of pressure, you know, when somebody hands you $30,000.
What is the defense for white civil rights? Like, what – white people's rights are being impeded on. Like, maybe I'm just out of the loop.
It's weird. Whenever I, like, hear these Richard Spencer types or whatever,
yes.
I'm always just kind of like, whatever. Then when you use the word, he favors segregation, I'm like, oh, yeah, that's really stupid. Like, segregation, really? You're going to go back to that one? It just seems so dumb. It's not even like I feel like it's so morally offensive. Because I can actually understand what are called like ethno nationalists. Like I understood like when like the Black Panther Party is like, we want to have a black country, only our people. Like it's something inherent within people. Humanity breaks down to our tribe, and at a base level, like that guy looks like me. Okay, that makes more sense than that guy. I don't know. You got to pick between A and B, and A looks like you, and B doesn't. You're like, I don't know. That guy looks like me. I guess. Yeah, he's probably one of my people. So I kind of understand that base urge there. But these people are just really dumb. Like, they don't know. Like, I'm never sure, like, some of these guys like him, I don't know if they're racist or if they're just really dumb.
Mm.
And in the sense of, I think that he might be kind of sincere when he's saying, like, I'm not anti-black, I'm pro-white. If I'm trying to give him the benefit of the doubt, and I'm really trying here. It's an idea.
I wouldn't bother it over me. No, good.
I think it's a really, really dumb, simple version of, look, Western culture is something special and worth preserving, and that's what he's trying to do. And I think it's very fair to say, I hate to use the word attack. I don't like the word. It doesn't fit for me. But I do think that there is a gradual shift occurring where you're seeing, again, just the entire migration of refugees and Muslims into Europe, that's just going to change the demographics of things. People from Iraq act differently than people from Sweden. I don't think it's really a stretch to say that. Doesn't mean it's bad or anything, but the language is different, the food is different, the religion is different, the clothes are different. And, you know, I like Western Europe shit. I like Asian shit, too. Like, if I went to Japan and everybody was speaking German, I'd be like, this is kind of a letdown. Like, I came here for the Japanese. What's going on? Like, oh, you're going to serve me sauerkraut? No, I want some sushi, which I'm kind of into recently.
Oh,
I,
wow.
I have no idea really? What that one came. It's crab. I like what? The crab. I don't know what the hell
that is. It's probably fake crab. It's, okay, sorry.
Dude, that's close enough for me. My gosh, it's got some sort of mustard on it. I get it.
Okay. Go on, sorry.
Like, I actually had a craving for it once. I was like, I want some sushi and white wine. I was like, what am I, a 45-year-old housewife? What's wrong with me here?
Getting there.
But that's what I'm trying to say. I think that if I'm being generous to them, it's like the, hey, don't say that I'm – he probably is bad. But I think that there's somewhat of a pushback happening from people with somewhat legitimacy of don't – like, I actually grew up not being a racist. Don't – you know, lump me in with all the other races. It's kind of like for the people being genuinely going, hey, I'm not a racist. My best friends are black. There are people out there going, what do you want me to do? It's kind of like the mindset of like the Al Franken mindset or whatever. It's like, really? Like, I'm getting accused? Like, hello, you know what I'm doing here. I'm making a joke. It's Garrison Keillor. These guys be like, wait, seriously, me? Aziz Ansari. It's kind of like, yeah, it's the racial equivalent of Aziz Ansari vis-a-vis the Me Too movement. Like, maybe he's being a little uncool, but at his core, you don't really think he crossed the line. Yeah, it's pretty good. I eventually got there.
Occasionally, we've talked about Bitcoin on here. Uh-huh. I saw this headline and it caught my eye today. 50 Cent is quoted as saying, I forgot taking 700 Bitcoins from my 2014 album, and now it's worth $7 million. So 50 Cent, the rapper, you've heard of him, right?
Oh, I have, yes.
Okay, good. Well, he has nothing to do with Yeezy or anything like that. This is a different guy. He... Went bankrupt at one point. Yeah. He blew up.
Go Shorty. It's your birthday.
Yeah.
I think he's like a Republican.
I don't know.
I remember reading that once. So I was like, okay, I guess he's rich.
He was. He had some up and downs in his career. Huge, biggest rap star on the planet for like a short window, blew up. And then he stopped selling records, and people got sick of him, and he was overexposed. This is kind of my take on it. But anyway, he also bought into like vitamin water, and was worth like at one point like $400 million. And somehow he lost it all, and ended up going bankrupt. And I think we might even talk about him going bankrupt and made fun of him. But apparently, he had an album in 2014 called Animal Ambition. And it was paid with Bitcoin for it. And he wrote that he didn't even remember doing this. TMZ reports that Animal Ambition brought the rapper around 700 Bitcoins worth several hundred thousand dollars at the time. And around $7.7 million today. The story...
Does he remember making an album?
No, he doesn't remember getting the Bitcoins. He remembers making the album.
But he paid for the album... Like, don't you remember making an album going, hey, how did I get paid for that? Did I get a check? No, somebody gave me some numbers.
I think it was sitting in his account and he hadn't thought about it since 2014. It's emerging just a few years after the rapper filed for bankruptcy protection under his given name, Curtis Jackson. In 2016, he said... I'm broke, and he...
This is like the best version ever of finding 20 bucks in your couch cushions.
Absolutely. Or if you found a really old rare coin in there. I'm like, holy shit. When did this fall out of my pocket? This is Buffalo Nickel.
My mom's best friend, like our close family friend, Amy, who's a neuroscientist and all this. She flies around the world for all this shit. She sits in first class everywhere. Like, the first class of the first class. As in, they one time cleared out all first class for a special VIP guest because Lady Gaga showed up and she wanted all the seats. And they still didn't kick Amy out. That's how, like, much she flies. Anyways, she's sitting on a plane once, and she's talking to this guy, and he's this big black guy. She didn't think anything of it, and she's oblivious, and she gets home, and she talks to her daughter, who's, like, a year younger than me. She goes, yeah, he's some artist. Like, he's like, his name's, like, Quarter or Nickel, or she goes, 50 Cent? He goes, yeah, that's the one, you know him? She just sat next to 50 Cent for, like, a six-hour flight, just made random stranger conversation with the guy, had no idea who he was. But it was, like, the only time in his life in years he's felt normal. Like, ah, this 50-year-old lady, this nice blonde lady, she doesn't have a clue who I am. She's just talking to me like I'm any old scary black guy. Ah, it's good to feel like that once again.
Dude, it's funny, though, because... I think we talk about it sometimes, like being in a bubble or something, like if John Jones walked past us, we'd be like, holy shit, that's John Jones. But what percentage of Americans do you think know who John Jones is? You know what I mean? Is it 20%?
I could have represented Logan Paul. If he could have come to me as a client, I would have been like, I don't know who you are.
Right. Or even somebody as big as McGregor, biggest star ever in MMA, half the country wouldn't recognize Conor McGregor.
I have zero clue who the big pop stars are right now. Like, who's like the teen? Like, is there like a new Justin Bieber or Selena Gomez or whatever? Are they still popular? Like, there might be some teen Tiger Beat guy who is beloved by tens of millions of girls, and I could just be walking down the street and I would, I don't know who that is. Your daughter might know.
She's really not into that yet.
She might know, though.
Yeah, she might. If kids are talking about it, but Bieber's still a thing, I think. And I don't know what the big boy group is now. I know one of them broke up. Some British boy band, but it seems like a lot of that stuff goes in like 10-year cycles, I feel like, too. But anyway, I bring the story to your attention because I know you have issues with your bedding. There's a conspiracy theory about Mattress Firm, the mattress store. Have you heard about this?
Good store, yeah.
Yeah.
This whole product that nobody needs, but yeah.
Mattresses, yes. It's amazing that there's so many of them.
Mattresses should be bought in boxes on shelves, people. Hello.
On Tuesday, a comment on Reddit suggested Mattress Firm was laundering money, and this comment went viral, and it has since been removed mysteriously. Reddit users said that the company was overstored in the U.S., given that it stocks a product that people typically buy every 7 to 10 years, and suggested that this was a sign of something more dubious going on. Mattress Firm responded to the allegations on Twitter with the meme of that white kid blinking a lot and looking weird. That was their response. Business Insider tried to contact Mattress Firm for an official response, and they did not respond.
Yes. There was a story out that a multi-million dollar company was a money laundering front, presumably for illegal crime organizations or whatever, and their public response was a meme.
Yes.
Like, and we all went and go, oh, okay, yeah, that's how you should do that. Like, that's a valid public response. You don't have to come out and say, I did not have sexual relations with that woman, Ms. Lewinsky. No, instead you just posted a GIF of Michael Jackson eating popcorn. People are like, oh, yeah, that's good. That totally makes sense. You guys wonder why Donald Trump is president? Mattress Firm responds to allegations of organized crime with memes.
One Reddit user wrote, I remember seeing four mattress firms all on each corner of an intersection once. There's no way there's such a demand for mattresses. It's some sort of giant money laundering scheme.
So is Starbucks. What's really great about that is the moment you said all this, I'm going, That totally makes sense. Like, who's buying all these fucking mattresses? We need stores just for mattresses, and there are a lot of them. And they
Or they jack up prices. Like, you can pay two grand for a Tempur-Pedic queen size mattress. Maybe it only costs fifty bucks. And it's one of those things you only buy every 10 years, and you're like, I've been sleeping like shit. I want to get a good mattress this time. And you're like, I'll have it for 10 years. And you buy this $2,000 mattress, but the markup is like 2,000% or some bullshit like that.
Maybe that's how they open a fucking mattress store.
Well, you gotta hire like a bunch of like Southeast Asian kids to make them for you, and then ship them over here on a barge. It's probably not that easy.
Yeah, I'm completely okay with the ethics of it, though.
I didn't doubt that. I just didn't think you would have
the. There are a lot of mattress stores, and how often do you... Nobody buys a mattress. You buy a mattress like once. Maybe twice when you're like, I got married, I need more space now, or something like that. And then, like, if you get really, really rich, you're like, I'm going to get new furniture for my house. I'll get a new mattress. I'm a rich person now. Otherwise, yeah, nobody buys mattresses. That's a really good theory. And plus, mattresses feel like there's shady people involved. Like, you know, you got that salesman attitude where they can lower prices, and you're not sure exactly what it costs, and everybody working there definitely would not pass e-verify. Yeah.
The mattress firm is owned by South African retailer Steinhoff. Came under scrutiny at the end of 2017 after postponing publishing its full-year accounts, citing accounting irregularities. And then the top two executives and chairman resigned. Stock price tanked by as much as 62% in one day, wiping out $15 billion of its market value.
Are they the only people selling mattresses? Like, how big could the fucking world mattress market be?
There's a place around here called Sleepy's, but I think that's But mattress firm bought them out in my area. There's no more Sleepy's. It's all mattress firm.
You can buy mattresses like at Sears and shit.
You can. Well, the big thing now is you order these mattresses online and they come in a box. Yeah. And like you unfold them and they like pop up on their own. They're weird. We were looking at mattresses come in boxes. No, but the technology has changed, I guess, like tufted needle is becoming purple. I was looking at them before because we were thinking about getting a new mattress. I still can't sleep at night, my back hurts. But
sucks to suck. Is it because of the dog?
No. Oh, we should talk about Puddle. I have some updates. But I forget my point. I think retailers are selling mattresses. You probably still get them at like Walmart and stuff like that, like the big mega stores. But mattress firms are the only one in my area anyway that still does this. And then I think people are buying these box mattresses online and they get there in a day or two and you open up a box and you throw it on your bed and you're good to go. And apparently the quality of those are pretty good. I mean, I know a few people have gotten them and they like them, so I don't know.
I'm always surprised by specialty stores like that, that they still exist. Like, there's a store to just sell lamps. Like, that exists. There's lamp stores still, and there are mattress stores. We're all kind of like, oh, you go to the mattress store. You just go to Walmart. You go to everything else there. It's like, but there's still bicycle stores and shit. Like, what?
Yeah, I think there's a mindset, though, on certain goods that you want a quality mattress because you're going to sleep on it, and you want something good, and you're not going to go to Walmart where they've got the cheapest shit and the poorest quality and try to save a buck. No, but I'm just saying there's certain things people want to spend more money on, and a mattress is one of them. People want a good night's sleep. It's like, I'm going to buy a mattress, I'm going to have it for a few years, I'll spend an extra $400 or $500 on it. This is something that I'm going to have and can literally affect the quality of my life. So I have thought about it
because I heard somebody's like, you know, you should spend a lot of money on it. You do spend a third of your life on that thing.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, that's a pretty good point. I made sure my mom, when she got a new mattress, I made sure she bought the more expensive one. Because I told my
what a good son, force your mom to spend more money.
I gave her the money. But I told her to make up the difference. But like, I remember Sandra.
I've never bought my mom a mattress, so that is nice.
I remember Sandra, I'm like, look, it's like an extra $3 a month. Wouldn't you spend an extra $3 a month to have a great night's sleep? She's like, yeah, I would. And here I am sleeping on a $50 air mattress that I have to kind of pump up every 2 weeks or so. And I'm loving it. Loving it.
Living the dream. As far as my puzzle goes, I know we've talked about her allergies in the past and how she has to take a pill every day. Now I got to give her shots of insulin twice a day because she has diabetes, and that's why she was pissing everywhere and drinking all that water. Turns out she has diabetes and needs a shot. So now I've got to, like, get these syringes. Is it CVS out there? So this is awesome. I get up. There's been three times in the last week and a half where I've had to go outside in my yard and collect her first piss of the morning. Have you ever had to collect dog piss before?
I wasn't supposed to. No.
Well, the best way to do it, according to my vet, is you follow the dog around, and then right when she squats down, female dog squat to pee, you put a ladle underneath her vag and collect the pee in the ladle, and then bring the steam piss, because it's like 30 degrees out, back and dump it in this little piss bottle, and you bring it to him. But you can't really pour like a ladle into a tiny bottle well. Like, ladles are made for bowls. Like, bowls of soup, you use a ladle. So it dumps all over the place, and there's piss all over the side of it, and whatever. So you clean that up, then you bring it to the vet, they test it, then they're like, oh, we need another sample in a couple of weeks. In the meantime, you're also giving the puggle her allergy medication, which you jam down her throat and close her mouth, and she chokes on it, swallows it, and sometimes spits it out, and you get to do it a couple times. And then, in addition, now we get to give her a shot twice a day, which involves, like, taking the scruff of her neck and, like, pulling it up and, like, jamming this needle into her, which is easy to do by yourself in the morning at 7 a.m. while your kids are running around. And that's how you start your morning every day. Forever until the dog dies.
How is your fucking dog still alive?
She's 11 now.
All this shit. She's 11. She's got a cancer and shit.
I didn't even get to the cancer. The tumor is a separate issue unrelated to the allergies or the diabetes. That's going to be another probably $1,200 to get taken care of and removed.
Your dog is broke. She's just broken, man. Take her back and get a new one.
No. We'll keep this dog. We don't want a new one. This dog's fine. This dog's fine.
You're going to have a real rough couple of days coming up, aren't you? Getting your kid's dog.
No, I'm going to let nature take its course because I wouldn't intentionally kill the dog. I just won't get upset when it naturally dies.
I'm just saying this is coming sooner rather than later. It's a lot of issues for a dog.
And a lot of money. Yeah. It's not ideal for anyone. Me or the dog or my family. But yeah, for anyone who's still listening at the show, never get a dog. Do you go to Taco Bell? Speaking of dogs.
I do. I like Taco Bell, yeah.
Okay, I haven't been to a Taco Bell in probably 20 years. It's not because I'm a snob. I just rather go to Wendy's. But
those two things are not alike at all.
Taco Bell and Wendy's, they're both drive-through fast food.
That's it. One serves hamburgers and chicken. Square hamburgers at that, and decent milkshakes. The other one's Mexican food.
That's not real Mexican food, FYI. And also, if you're driving by and you've got your choice of Wendy's or Taco Bell, I would pick Wendy's. That's all.
Okay.
So I guess I'm a crazy person. So essentially, this guy in Florida was arrested for driving under the influence after pulling up to a drive-thru window at a bank and trying to order a burrito. Douglas Francisco, 28, had reportedly fallen unconscious after entering the drive-thru lane at the Bank of America in Spring Hill on Wednesday. Martin Clausen, the bank's manager, says he reached out and knocked on the window of Francisco's blue Hyundai sedan for some time before the unconscious man roused himself awake and placed his order for a burrito. Clausen then informed Francisco he was not at a Taco Bell drive-thru and called the police.
We've all been there.
You've driven up to a bank drunk, fallen asleep, and ordered Taco Bell?
No, I drove up to a Taco Bell and asked for my account balance.
Yeah, that's not surprising. Could they help you?
Yeah, they said, motherfucker, you're broke. was like, oh, yeah, that's right. Give me three tacos with no sauce on it.
Meatless. So police administered field sobriety tests, which Francisco failed, and noted in a police report that he made several statements that were different from reality. Francisco was also found to be carrying oxycodone and Xanax at the time of his arrest, but had prescriptions for both.
You're telling me he was on drugs and pills? I am shocked. You say this is Florida?
Yes. One of the southern states.
And like, coastal. I was just like, my brain's just immediately like, it's got to be Florida. Somewhere in the middle.
And lastly, we have a story about a fifth grader. If it would load, give me a second here. I bring this to your attention because I just wonder if you know this child. A nine-year-old accidentally shared her grandfather's marijuana gummies with her fifth grade class. Basically, she came to school with what looked like typical gummy candies. But they were actually edibles laced with THC, one of the psychoactive chemicals found in cannabis, according to the school principal. Officials at the school only learned of the mix-up, which happened earlier this month, after the student went to the school nurse feeling sick and complaining of dizziness. The school's dean and elementary students told the Albuquerque Journal, as soon as we looked at it, we said, nope, that is not candy. The candies reportedly belonged to the student's grandfather. Neither she nor the three other students who ate that had lasting symptoms, though some of the students did get giggly.
I like that the reporter couldn't help himself, had to add it at the end, like, they got a little high. Like, we're all just kind of collectively laughing, like, the little kids got high. Nobody got hurt, so we can laugh. Also, how has this happened, though? Like, I understand that, oh, they look like candy, but it's your weed. You don't just leave this shit out. It's weed. You should be protecting it and keeping it sacred and, like, away from people. Like, you do everything you can. I wouldn't have it anywhere near candy. I'd have it under lock and key. I mean, if I knew there were kids around or something like that. If I saw a kid ate something, I would pump that little fucker's stomach.
As far as edibles go, is that a thing that interests you?
Oh, they're great.
Okay.
They're fantastic.
Better than vaping?
It's different. It metabolizes different. It lasts different. It feels different. It can be more psychoactive. I've never like hallucinated, but you get more of that quality as opposed to a stoned traditional like high or whatever. But I love them. You just pop a couple and just forget about it, and about like 30, 45 minutes later, you go, oh, I totally forgot what I did a while back. Oh, like that's what's great. It's like you drink something, you feel it pretty quick. You take a hit of weed, like a bong rip or whatever, like you're going to feel it right away. You take an edible. It's like this. It's like throwing yourself a surprise party. It's great.
Yeah, it's interesting because There's a couple pie food restaurant podcast things I listen to. And one of them was all about edibles and having them in baked goods and different cooking and all this stuff. And I was like, that'll be a thing in a few years. You can probably go to some bakery and buy stuff laced with THC or whatever, CBD or whatever it is. And that's interesting to me because it's food related and world changes and it'll be a thing because. With food, a lot of sauces have alcohol based to them, whether it's red wine or sherry or whatever. And I mean, a lot of that stuff's cooked up, but even still, it's just an interesting change, advancement, whatever. I guess some people would be arguing that it's a negative in food, but to me it's an interesting thing that'll probably catch on as time goes on. I think there's even a show on Vice's TV channel called Bon Appetit, and it's all recipes with weed and stuff in them.
I think the big thing that they really need to figure out is not like a legal sense, but like how to like regulate the content as far as like how much there is and things. Like we have a very good idea. Like we know exactly how much alcohol there is in a bottle of wine.
Yeah.
And like with weed, we don't quite have that. They haven't really been, like, whenever you bake, like, make cookies or whatever, it's kind of common, like, oh, like, part of the brownie will be stronger than the other part. And so like, you'll eat, like, half a brownie, you go, I don't feel anything. You either have to go, oh, that was where all the weed was located somehow. Like, you don't do that with alcohol. It's not like you take a shot, you go, oh, nope, I got a bad batch. I got a bad glass of whiskey here. Give me some more. But once they figure that out, it's going to be great. I can't wait. Oh, I got to go to the doctor soon, I hope.
I know there's some businesses in California that are doing chocolate covered peanuts and all this different high quality chocolate candy, high end shit with it.
Like, some of the candy bars I've bought are actually, like, if they didn't have weed in them, they'd still be delicious. Like, they're not going to change the world, but you go, yeah, it's not a bad mint chocolate candy bar. I kind of enjoyed eating that. And then a half an hour later, you go, oh, I really enjoy eating that.
Give me a couple more. And lastly, speaking of kids and eating things, the Tide Pod Challenge has been catching fire. I know you have some strong opinions on that. Essentially, there's these dish detergent pods that got orange and blue on them. And initially there was controversy years ago when these came out because people legit thought they were candy. And little kids were eating them, like elderly people with dementia were picking them up and eating them like they were candy. And then they're like, oh, this is disgusting dish detergent, gross. But now kids, probably teenagers, tweens, whatever, filming themselves biting into these Tide Pods, and they spit it all out and drool it all over the table. They don't eat it, they just bite it?
The ones I've seen, like they get grossed out and they don't actually swallow them.
But YouTube, it's gotten so out of control that YouTube has taken all these videos down because some of the kids were doing it. And it was like all the rage. It was like a week or two ago. But I mean, I know that trends happen with kids.
I understand the base impulse of children to be like, hey, this is the cool thing. I'll be like mini famous on YouTube. Like, oh, I got 5,000 people to see me do it. Like, it's a one-up challenge. I get that. But holy shit, this is dumb.
It is dumb.
You're just biting into soap. You're not jumping over anything. It's just biting soap. And you're just like, look at me. I bit something and drooled on myself. And that's it.
Right.
What if do the Harlem Shake or one of those things? I'm like, oh, I can't. Like, there's like a way to like be creative with that. Like, right. Oh, I did it this way. Like, are you like going to bite the Tide Pod in a unique way? And everybody's going to go, oh my gosh, I never thought of biting into the Tide Pod from a right angle. Genius. PewDiePie, you've done it again. Logan Paul, what are you doing over there? Well, you swallowed it. Oh, good thing you're in the proper forest.
I think it's one of those things where the first couple people who did it, their reactions is what got the laugh. Like, oh, I shouldn't have done that, or someone around yelling and people laugh. And it's like, oh, I'll try, like they dare you to do it, like you dare somebody to do anything stupid, whatever it might be. But there's so many dumbass videos of people doing stupid shit, like this didn't even, it was like a blip on my radar. Like, of course kids are biting into Tide Pods because it's viral and it's stupid and people think it's funny. So to me it was no different than drunk people doing things or some dumbasses on Derek Lewis's Instagram page fighting in the street or whatever it might be. It was just people being stupid.
All of those things are something that you would do even if they weren't filming you. Like, you would – people get in fights all the time. People drink. People do drugs. They huff paint. They do all these things. Nobody would sit around in their house just
eating Tide Pods
alone, just going and drooling themselves. I know that there's a lot of things you wouldn't do if you weren't on camera, I guess. This is really dumb.
I agree. But to me, it's just like an evolution, like Jackass, like Steve-O snorting wasabi, or
Like he swallowed a living goldfish and ate like a dead rat and did all this stupid stuff. It's just like the next level of that 20 years later.
Like if it was like if there was some competitive element to it, I would get it. If it was how many Tide Pods could you eat in a minute, or something like that, I'd be like, okay, people are challenging themselves.
Now you're thinking. I think we're going to take it to another level.
But like the wasabi up the nose, like there's like some like look, like I can take this crazy amount of pain and pressure or whatever. Like, okay, there's something like I am manly. This you know modern version of lifting something heavy. It's just like I'm going to bite it and drool.
It's dumb.
People are famous for being indistinguishable from somebody missing a chromosome.
I understand, but there's videos of people doing stupid shit all the time, like teasing themselves. And you know what I mean? Like, this isn't a new thing, and I mean, it's relatively harmless. It's not like you're swallowing a bunch of soap, and even if you were, fucking kids in the 1920s had soap put in their mouths. I mean, Ralphie and Christmas story.
It was so awful. It was a punishment, and these morons are doing it for attention. Are they going to start, like, sitting in corners next for attention or writing on the board 100 times?
probably start writing racist shit on a chalkboard and get kicked out of school.
If they're in Maine, they'll get elected mayor.
Town manager. Yeah, I think that's it for me. Is there anything else you would like to bring up to our adoring fan? Okay, thank you for listening to MMA and stuff on halfguard.com. My name is Matt. That was Mike. Check us out on World Wide Web at halfguard.com, Instagram, Twitter. Thank you for listening. We should be back next week. Bye-bye.
Get up, cocksuckers. It's all over. Listen, we had a rough couple of months. Fucking Katrina's cousin Maria, the other one, Puerto Rico, Houston, fucking Florida. Listen, it's been tough up to now. The earthquake in Mexico, you know, the White House, whoever the fuck is going on. But it don't matter. They want to shoot, it's time for us to fucking shoot, cocksuckers. They want to get down and dirty. Don't forget who the fuck we are. You understand me? We're the baddest motherfuckers out there. You send a message to that fucking North Korean. He's going to be sniffing my dick and sucking my asshole. That's the focus. We're going to North Korea in like a year. It's going to be an island. It's going to glow in the dark. You know why? Because we're Americans, cocksuckers. Who the fuck do you think you're dealing with? Stop with the gun control. They're selling more guns than ever the last 3 days. Stop with the fucking whining. Stop with the Russians on Facebook. I don't give a fuck. Worry about yourself. Keep your eyes open and get the fuck off Snapchat and fucking Twitter, cocksucker. Stay black.